Good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning, whatever it happens to be, wherever you happen to be as you're watching this. My name is Gary Hardy. I'm Director of Non-Traditional Instruction here at the college at DCC. Jimmy Winfield is here in the classroom with me. He's one of the six students in this session of DCC 101. The rest of you, it looks like, are going to be watching this after the fact, and that's perfectly fine. That's part of what Flex Campus is about, the ability to participate live or to participate by watching recordings after the fact. We'll talk about that tonight as well. Let me start with a word of prayer, and then we'll go on ahead with what we're going to, our agenda for the evening. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for that chance to start a new set of classes. We thank you for the students you've brought to us this semester, especially these six who are starting fresh with us this semester in these new classes for them. New students to us, we pray that very quickly we'll get to know each other and get to appreciate each other and be able to help each other learn and to be successful in our academic pursuits and also in our spiritual growth. Lord, we love you and we thank you for blessing us with the minds that we have to be able to use for you in your service. And we pray these things in your Son's blessed name. Amen. All right. This is DCC 101 or 201. A couple of you, it says you're enrolled in 201, the rest of you in 101. It doesn't make any difference. It's more of an administrative designation than it is. It's the same material, same stuff, same assignments, either way you're categorized, so it doesn't really matter. That's why the course site says DCC 101-DCC 201 or course number GENS 1111 or GENS 2111. What you see in front of you on the screen is one of our online course sites. You'll hear them referred to as Moodle sites many times. Moodle is the service that we use to put our course sites up with. It's what's called a LMS, a learning management system, or sometimes a CMS, a course management system. If you've taken online classes anywhere else before, they might have used Moodle, they might have used something called Blackboard, or some other ones. It's basically where we manage your courses. All of your Flex Campus courses that you take will have a site like this, a course site like this. I've got it on our course site right now. When you first begin, if you first log on, you usually end up on the front page, which looks like this. And it's got some announcements on it and things like that. Once you're there, once you've set up your Moodle account, and I know at least three of you have because you're already you have already enrolled with the enrollment key into the course site, and I saw your names there listed as participants. Jimmy, you were one of those. I think Martha and Jeanette were the other two, if I remember right, who had gotten in already and done that. Once you're in, then any course that you enroll in on the site, then you can always access it from this tab up here that says My Courses. If you click on it, it's going to give you a drop-down menu of all the courses you're enrolled in. Now, I'm enrolled in a lot here. I'm supervising and teaching several of these, but so you can go down and find, for example, I'm teaching a cross-cultural missions class. I just finished World Religions last night and one section of DCC 101 last night, and then I've got these internships that I'm working with, and this is our class here, so you can always click here and see. Other things that you'll find here, though, as I kind of familiarize you with it, quick links here takes you to some pretty important resources. All of you, when you enrolled in the college, were given a .dcc.dallas.edu email address. We call that Crusader Mail. We're the Dallas Christian College Crusaders. That's our mascot name. And so we call that our Crusader Mail. If anytime you want to go in and access that, of course, you can. It's a Google-based email, if you didn't figure that out already. It's a Google service. So it works like Gmail. Yeah. And which I happen to like. I use Gmail for all my non-work stuff anyway, so it's no big deal to me. But Crusader Mail, so if you need to get into that, you just click this, it'll take you to that. The DCC Virtual Bookstore, where you can go to order books for your classes online. We do not maintain a physical bookstore here on campus. We did a long time ago, but in this age of the big mail order houses like Amazon and others, we don't do that anymore. So the DCC Virtual Bookstore is where you can go to get the book lists for your classes. It's operated by, we contract with a company called eCampus, and they make they're the providers. You don't have to buy your books there. If you're using financial aid vouchers to purchase your books, you are locked into getting them from there. But if you're paying cash out of your own pocket for your books, you can buy them anywhere you like. Okay, you can go to Amazon, you can go to christianbook.com, you can go to Half Price Books and see if they got them there used, you know, anywhere you want to get them. But if you're using financial aid vouchers, and of course, this is where you can always find the book list. In fact, I can kind of show you that real quick. So you, here you can go, it says to order textbooks. Now, and notice it takes you to the Dallas Christian College because eCampus is a big company. They work with a lot of other people besides us. So you can go to order textbooks and select your course. And first you have to figure out, okay, this is the, this right now is the Spring Flex Online Quest. And then you can pick, for example, this class is, it has a GNS number, GENS for General Studies. Click on that, and 1111, that's our course. And when you click on it, it brings it up and you can hit select. Okay, so we've selected the course that we want. Now we're gonna go over here to view textbooks. And this will tell us the two books you need to have for this class. One is called Freedom from the Tyranny of the Urgent by Charles Hummel. And the other one is down below here, the MLA Handbook for Writers of Research Papers. Okay, those are the two textbooks for this class. The MLA Handbook is something you'll use the entire, you know, once you're done with this class, if you want to sell Freedom from the Tyranny of the Urgent to somebody, feel free to do that. It has some nice stuff in it, but probably you won't really use it a whole lot once this class is over. Hopefully you'll learn what's in it. The MLA Handbook, you'll want to hang on to that because you'll be using that a lot for the rest of the time that you're here. So anyway, but you can then purchase them there if you want to, or you can just find out what the books are, and then you can copy the ISBN numbers and, you know, do a search at Amazon or one of the sites I like is just one that's called allbookstores.com. You enter an ISBN number or a title of a book, and it searches, golly, seems like 20 different online retailers to look for the best price on the book and everything. So feel free to use those kinds of services as well. But like I say, if you're buying with financial aid vouchers, then you're kind of locked into using this site here. But other than that, you can get your books from wherever you get the best bargain or whatever. And you know, also, you know, you can always look to buying used books from fellow students who've taken classes before if they still have theirs and that sort of thing. So that's the virtual bookstore. I say it's virtual because we don't really have, you know, we don't have a bookstore here on campus. Going back to the course site then, another tab here is the library and research tab. Now, typically, when I do the first night of DCC 101, 201, I typically have our librarian, Mrs. Jane Reynolds, come in and speak to the class. I just had her do this 3 weeks ago, so I didn't force her to come back tonight, but we recorded her presentation from that night that she came and spoke to the class. And that I'll have that recording available on the course site for you to watch, and I'm going to ask you to watch it so you can get used to it. Many of you will never, ever come to campus. Some, like Jimmy, live close enough where they can come here and come live for class. Some of you will participate in the live web conference. Some of you will watch recordings. Some of you live so far. Some of you don't live even in Texas. You know, some of you live far, far from here, and you'll never visit our library once. But the library, many of our library resources are available to you. And I'm not going to go through a big presentation of it here because she does it in her recording that you're going to watch. But we have all of these, whoops, all these things that come up along here are all different online journals and other material that you can use in your research for writing your papers and things like that. So there. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Doing a training?
We're doing class, DCC 101, 201.
Okay. I thought for a minute you might be training an instructor, so I thought maybe I should introduce myself. But you're not, so.
Nope.
That's fine.
All right. Everybody, this is Kyle Martin, and coordinator of non-traditional instruction. He'll be sending you emails. He'll be sending you emails every time a class is getting ready to start, and also what books you need to get and everything. So you ought to know him anyway. Kyle's also the guru of helping you if you are having technical problems with the site, although I'm going to show you where to file an actual tech support request in a minute. But if you have, you know, he's the guy that will send you emails telling you when class sites are open and that kind of thing. He's my partner. We work well together most of the time, except when we don't.
like right now,
yeah.
When I interrupt your class.
That's all right. There's few people I'd rather be interrupted by more than you, so
well,
there you go.
All right.
Have a great weekend, man. So yeah, that was kind of actually serendipitous to have him come in like that. So that's great. So anyway, there's all these journals and things, and I'm not gonna get any more deep into that because, like I say, Mrs. Reynolds explains all that in her presentation, and you'll be able to watch that on the course site. I'll put that link up. Right, I should have put it up before class. I forgot. I'll put it up right after class tonight or first thing in the morning. You'll be able to watch it. And here's the technical support thing I was saying. The bottom thing here is tech support. If you're having trouble with Moodle, if you can't get into a class, or if you can't upload your assignment, or something's amiss, then you fill out one of these technical support forms, and this will open it up for you, or it should. Maybe. Maybe I need to. You know, how do you use tech support when it won't open?
That's good.
When you can't open the tech support thing, what happens?
I can actually see it on my own.
I have a hard time figuring out how to use this thing sometimes. It's the trackpad instead of a mouse. Oh, wait, I think it opened up over here maybe. Yeah, there it is. It opened up in a different form. So when you get the tech support form, it asks you to fill out some questions, you know, like your name in the block there, a phone call that we can call you back if we need to, your email, the course name, the instructor's name, which week of the course you're in where the problem is happening, what your operating system is, for example, if you're using Windows 8, Windows 7, Mac, whatever. What browser you're using, whether it's Internet Explorer, which I hate, or Firefox, which I love, or Chrome, which I kind of like too, and that kind of thing. Anyway, priority level, like for example, if you've got an assignment that's due in 30 minutes and you can't get in to submit it, I would mark that as urgent because, you know, we want to make sure you can get your assignment in on time. If it's just, you know, there's a resource you wanted to look at, but you can't get to it, but it's not critical that you have it right this minute, you can mark it low or normal. Here's the truth. We try to respond to all technical support requests, regardless of the priority that they're given, within 30 minutes. Okay. That doesn't mean we can always solve the problem in 30 minutes. But within 30 minutes, you should get a reply from either Kyle or me, usually. We're usually the two guys that do that, and Kyle does it more than I do. But you, within 30 minutes, you should at least receive an email from us saying, hey, thanks for telling us about the problem. We're investigating it. If nothing, sometimes you'll get a reply saying, hey, we fixed it just now, you know, go, or you're the fifth one today to tell us about it. We're working on it. You know, those kinds of, usually when we'd have that going on, we put a general announcement out to let people know, yeah, we know there's a problem. We're working on it. So we don't get inundated with tech support requests, but please feel free to use this whenever you need to. Now, you know, what? Give us all the detail that you can so that we can try to figure out what's going on. Because, you know, that's the thing about using the type of technology that we use. It's important that we keep it up and running for you. Otherwise, you know, since you're not going to ever be really turning in assignments on paper, especially those of you that are far away, we need to make sure that we keep the sites up so that you can submit your work like you're supposed to and everything. And so it's important for us to know when there are problems. So please, you know, if you're having a problem, don't think, well, somebody else must have reported this already. Please feel free to use the tech support form so we know what's going on. We can't, if we don't know there's a problem, we can't fix it. So let me go back to the main page then. So that's what's under these quick links. The My Dashboard tab is where you can go in to change your profile. One of the things you're going to do in this class is update your profile, put a profile picture up by your profile, those kinds of things. It's one of the activities that you'll do during the duration of this class. Not tonight, but I mean during the class time. Calendar is where you can go. It'll put your schedule of your classes on there that you're enrolled in. It'll let you know when they're meeting. Messages are where you can send messages. This is actually, as an instructor, this is my preferred way of communicating with you. You go into messaging or messages and click on it. And it'll take you here. You can search for people you want to, like, let's say I want to send Kyle Martin, who is just in here, a message. I enter his name and I hit search people and messages. I think. There it goes. I think it's going now. There we go. And I found Kyle here. And so I can click on his name then here. And now these are messages that he and I have sent to each other. And that's the thing about it. It keeps a permanent record of all of our correspondence. See, this goes all the way back to August the 18th of last year. I can always go back and review. You know, emails get deleted and stuff like that, you know. And so, but I go down here to the bottom, and I can type in my message and hit send message, and it'll go to him. Now, you may, those of you that have already used Moodle a little bit may have already recognized that one of the things it does is it'll also generate an email and send it to whatever email you used when you first set up your account, which by default should have been your Crusader mail, the dcc.dallas.edu. So anytime someone sends you a message through the Moodle messaging system, you're going to get an email of it in your email. That way you don't have to be online on the course site to get your message. And you can simply reply to that if you want to, and it's basically going to generate an email and send it back to the email address of the person who sent it. My preference is to try to communicate using this messenger feature, though, because once we go outside of it and start using emails, it takes us out of this record trail that we have here, which I find it very helpful in trying to I have so many students, I don't always remember what somebody sent me or told me. And if the email gets deleted and I forget what's going on, I can always go back and look at our message trail here to remind me, oh yes, I told that student I would give them a 2-day extension on this assignment, or I said this, or I said that. And so, you know, it's helpful in that way. So let's go back to the main course page then. Yeah, so what I do then, if I get an email of a message, then I go into the course site. And when you have a new message that comes in, there's a little pop-up in the corner. I can't really show you that very easily right now, but it's pop-up. It'll say you have new messages. They'll give you the link to go to the messages and open up the message system, and you can start looking at your messages there. I showed you the My Courses tab. Let's see. Is there anything else on my dashboard I wanted to show you? That's really it. The badges, we don't really use here. Private files, you can actually where and why would you use private files? Let's say, for example, you're working on an assignment at a library or something like that, and you're using a public computer that you don't want to save your work to that, obviously. Now, there's lots of different ways you can save your work. You can take a flash drive and put it on that. We kind of shy away from using flash drives here at the college simply because they're the biggest virus carriers there are. More viruses get transmitted from computer to computer using flash drives than just about any other way. So we encourage students to use a web-based, like a cloud-based, like Dropbox or Google Drive. Those are all free up to a certain storage unit, certain storage limit. But you can also do that here. So if you go to private files here, and I shouldn't have any in there because I've never done any, but like if I've been working on a Word document or something, then I come in here, it's just like attaching it to an email or something. I click this button right here, this little add button, and I go to browse, and then I go on the computer and find, you know, what I'm looking for, like in my documents or whatever. And, you know, I find the file that I'm looking for. Like maybe it's in this folder, like maybe it's this one here. And then I just click open and it attaches it. Then I click upload this file. And then I can go back and retrieve it at any time that I want to keep working on it. So, you know, that's one, it's one of those ways that you can save a file if you want to. Now, I don't really want to upload that, so I'm not going to. But that gives you an idea of what the private files thing on my dashboard there is. And nobody else can access those, so they're safe. In other words, just because they're in Moodle, I can't get to them, or nobody else can. Nobody's going to like go in and find your file and mess with it or anything like that. Not me, not Kyle, not anybody. So that's, you're all safe with that. And so then under my courses, we looked at that a moment ago, all the different courses that are currently open and that you're currently enrolled in will be there. Theme colors is just where you can change your theme color as it suggests. Like right now we're in the default color, but you can change it to silver or the black and red. I just always use the default pretty much. So that shows you the things that are available across that ribbon up at the top. Also, if as a DCC student, you're also eligible, if it's just showing it there, for Microsoft Office 365 for free. I'm not going to take you through all that, but just go there and open it up if you want to, and you'll find out it allows you to do MS Office kinds of things on mobile devices. You can do like Outlook stuff, or not Outlook, you can do Outlook stuff too, but you can do Microsoft Word stuff, Excel stuff like that online without having to have the software on your machine and everything. It has some limitations, but if you've ever used some of what Google has out there, the Google Sheets and the Google Docs, stuff like that, it's very similar to that. So it's a web-based way of doing it where you don't necessarily have to have the software installed on your computer. So let's go back into our course site for this class. And before I show you more on the course site, let me explain sort of how things are going with this class. DCC 101, you're the first group that's doing DCC 101, 201 this way. In the past, we have always offered DCC 101 during the first 6-week session of every semester. The way things work here is we have a spring and a fall semester, or a fall and a spring semester, and then summer session, like most schools. But because our classes are only 6 weeks, our flex campus classes are only 6 weeks long, we actually have 3 flex campus sessions each semester. So we just finished last night the first 6-week session of classes. Okay, and in the past we've always offered the DCC 101 class during the first 6-week session of every semester. But because we enroll students like we have you, after that class is over or after it's already started in some cases, we felt like it was important enough for us to figure out a way for you all to get DCC 101, because the next time it was going to be offered as a regular class again wasn't going to be until the summer. So you would have gone through an entire semester here of classes without ever having had the benefit of taking DCC 101. We didn't think that was a good idea. We began to realize that wasn't the best idea, that it was hurting students to not be able to have that. So what we've done starting tonight, this is the first time, is I'm reteaching the first night of DCC 101 live with you all tonight. Then you're going to have the opportunity to watch the recordings from the second and third classes that I taught. The third one was just Monday night. I taught that class through the last 3 Monday nights in a row. So this is my third class to teach this week at night. I taught Monday night, last night, and tonight. So I'm getting kind of tired, but I'll be okay. I'm going to make it through. So this is you won't attend any other live sessions of this class. You'll watch recordings of the other 2 weeks, and I'll show you how to do that and everything in a minute. But the main thing was is we wanted you guys to have the chance to have what other students have. We've discovered that there's a pretty good correlation between student success for those who take DCC 101 before they get started with their classes than for those who wait and don't take it until after they've taken 2 or 3 classes, especially in those first classes. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why I'm here tonight instead of out running around on a Friday night or whatever, to help you guys with that. And I'm happy to do that. So, this is Flex Campus, and I know you've all just been probably told all about that by Heidi or Jean-Claude or Crystal or all of them about how Flex Campus works, but just let me make sure I put it on the record here so you understand. Flex Campus is our program, and let me start by telling you how it developed, where it came from, and why we do it the way we do it. When I first came to the college, I've been here since 2000. This is my 15th year. In July, I'll celebrate my completion of my 15th year here at the college. When I first came here, we had a very fledgling online program, and we had a well-established in-classroom night program that was basically, it started as a degree completion program. We call it Quest back then. The classes were 6 weeks long, and they met at night, one night a week, like we're doing in this class, or well, you'll do in your other classes and everything. And we started an online program at the same time, and it was a straight online program. There was not any live classroom teaching. Everything was done through discussion boards and that kinds of thing. Eventually, we came to the conclusion that we had available to us the technology and the expertise to merge that, what we called our Quest program and our online program, into something that we thought was kind of unique and exciting for students. Because one of the things that online students would often tell us was, I really appreciate the education I'm getting, and because I live, you know, 500 miles from DCC, or because I work nights and can't come to school at night and things like that, you know, as much as I love it, I would really like the classroom experience too. And so what we did was we merged the two together. We continued to teach the classes at night, but we started webcasting them live like we're doing now. In addition to that, we recorded them so that students who couldn't be live could watch the recording. And that's what you're experiencing now. And we call it our Flex Campus program because of the flexibility that it gives you. In any class you're in, you have the choice of how you want to participate. You can come to the classroom for the classes. You can watch the live webcast, or you can watch the recording after the fact. Now, if you watch the recording after the fact, you're required to submit notes to show that you actually watched it. And you'll also submit a couple of questions for the instructor to answer at the beginning of the next week's class. We call that our virtual office hours, so that you get involved in some discussion kinds of things that way, okay? And so that's how it works. And understand also that you're not locked into any one particular way of participating for the whole course either. Like, just because you come live the first night, you don't have to come live the second time. You can do the webcast. You can switch it up all through the class. You don't have to tell us in advance. You know, I would say this. You know, if you've been in a class, let's say, where and this happens, you know, plenty of times, where maybe only one or two of you has been coming regularly to the classroom, and you know that you're going to be watching the live webcast or be watching the recording 1 week, it's not a bad thing to let the instructor know that, you know, I've been coming the last 3 weeks, but I'm not going to be able to make it this week, just so they're not, you know, waiting to start. We typically try to start class right on time when we say we're going to start it, but, you know, sometimes if we think, oh, maybe, trust me, those of you that don't live around here, those of you that do live around here will know what I'm talking about when I talk about traffic around here, especially this interchange right outside the college out here at LBJ 635 and Interstate 35. It's a mess. All the construction on LBJ is just crazy. And even going up 35, going north, I can understand why. And at that time, you know, trying to get here for a 6:30 class, I know you can get delayed. So, you know, sometimes an instructor may want to wait an extra 5 minutes if they think you might be in traffic or something. But if you're not coming, it's not required, but it's a nice courtesy to maybe shoot them a message saying, hey, I'm either going to be late or I'm not going to be there at all tonight, just so they kind of know and kind of plan how they're going to do things and everything like that. So, like I said, you're free to choose your way of participation each week. When you get into a course site, it's going to be broken down. First of all, at the top, I need to change one thing here because I've got this instructor view and you're going to see all kinds of stuff that, frankly, you don't really need to see. Not because it's bad for you to see it, it's just going to confuse you if you see it. I'm going to switch my role to that of a student, so all you see is the stuff that you'll actually see on a course site. Now, that's better. Okay. Like I said, we're not trying to really hide anything from you there, but it gets confusing if you see stuff that you're like, what is that all about? Well, that's for the teachers. So at the top, you'll always see the help pages, introduction and overview, and some things like that. One of the things that may become important to you, probably at least at one point in time during your time here, this is going to probably pertain to you. This right here where it says what if my textbooks have not arrived? If class, it's time for class to start and you're waiting, you've ordered your textbooks, but they haven't arrived yet, what do you do? Okay, that happens sometimes. What do you do is you can click this link and it's going to say, sometimes there are legitimate problems with textbook orders. A student orders in good time or even chooses expedited shipping, but the book does not arrive before the class begins. For students whose books have not arrived, DCC has scanned the first week's reading and made it available for download. Now, understand it's only the first week's reading. We cannot go, because of copyright laws and everything else, we're only permitted to give you the pages for the first week's reading. So if you don't have it by the second week, we have to figure out some other way for you to get it, you know. But for the first week, we can do this. So what you do, how you get the access to these scans, the access is restricted. What you have to do is you have to submit a receipt that shows you've ordered the textbooks. So a copy, usually when you order online, you get an email receipt that says, you know, they processed your, they're processing your order, that kind of thing. So once you've done that, then all you have to do is go to where it says add submission right here. And when you do that, you come down here and you'll just click this. You'll upload, you'll basically upload the receipt there. Okay, so you, like I said before, when we were showing how to attach to the private file thing, you click on this to add the browse, find it, upload it, and you're good to go. What it'll do is it'll submit it, and I will see it. And once when I see it, then I'll make a mark beside it. And when that happens, there'll be a link that you will see on this page. You can't see it now because nothing's been submitted, but once you've submitted that and I've checked it off, then there'll be a link that you can click on that will open up those files for you to read. So like I said, that's probably going to happen to you at least once during your time here where you're going to need to use that. Just the nature of things, it sometimes happens that way. So just know that that's available for you. We scan them. And they're PDF files that you can read on any computer, you know. Also in this top section, there'll be a thing that'll tell you about the requirements and grading of the class. There's the attendance policy. The attendance policy is very simple. If you do not participate in class, you're counted absent. What we mean by participate in class means if you didn't come to the classroom for the class session or watch it on the website, watch it on the live stream or watch the recording, then you're counted absent for that week. It doesn't matter if you turned in assignments and things. This is about attendance in the class or, class attendance. So like we said, there's three ways you can get class attendance. Come live to the room, watch the live conference, or watch the recording. If you don't do any of those three, then you get counted absent for the week. If you get two absences, you can fail the class, okay, for excessive absences. Remember, there's only six class sessions in your classes usually. You miss two class sessions, you've missed one-third of the class, one-third. That's a lot of class time that you can never get back. Thankfully, with the recordings, there's really, you know, Jimmy and I were talking about this kind of earlier before we started recording. There's really not any good excuse for being absent. Because you can always watch the recording. If you choose to watch the recording, you have until 8 a.m. of the next class session to submit your notes. So, for example, if it's a Monday night class you're in, and you watch the recording of, say, week one on Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever, you have until the next Monday at 8 a.m. to upload your class notes. And, yeah, it's a full week, basically, almost. The reason we want them by 8 a.m. is because in addition to the notes, you're going to post a couple of questions for the professor to answer. That gives the professor some time during the day to think about your questions and formulate his or her answers for that. You know, if you're sending them in at, 5:45 and he or she is supposed to do the office hours at 6, well, it doesn't give the professor hardly any time to prepare. So you've got to, account for that. So that's why it's 8 a.m. as opposed to later in the day. But you have, you know, plenty of time to get them done. So that's our, if you want to see all that in writing, you can just click on this and this will explain what you have to do to get your attendance. Late work policy, we have a suggested one. The main thing is whatever your instructor tells you is his or her late work policy, okay? Generally speaking, we want to hold students to deadlines. Deadlines are a part of real life. You know, at your job, if your boss says these things have to be done by a certain time, he means it. You know, and if you don't do them, then there's consequences. We also understand, though, that for many, if not most of you, adding school to your already busy life is not the easiest thing you're ever going to do. Many of you have full-time jobs. Some of you are married. Some of you have children. Many of you are volunteers or even paid ministers at churches that have responsibilities there. You know, you can't control when someone dies and you have to go to the hospital or the funeral home and help them. You can't control when your children come down with this or that and have to be taken to the emergency room. There are things that are out of your control. I can say this almost 100% of the time. Your instructors here are very sensitive to those things. And we're always willing to work with students, provided that they communicate with us what's going on. And when I say communicate with us, don't wait until after everything's over to come and tell us there was a problem. Let us know at your earliest convenience that there's a problem, you know, that, you know, rather than saying, you know, rather than waiting till the next week saying, well, I wasn't here last week because this, you know, send us a message or something as soon as you reasonably can saying, hey, I got some stuff going on here. I may need a little help with deadlines and stuff like that. And most of us are very amenable to giving you assistance without penalty. You know, I got my master's degree. I was married. I had a part-time job at an office and a part-time job in ministry. I had a wife and two little kids. You know, there were times when I had to talk to my professors about, hey, can I get another 4 hours or another 8 hours or another day on something? And they understood too, where, you know, if it was good reasons. If you turn work in and, you know, no professor is obligated to take late work from you if you don't have a good reason for turning it in late. And I always tell students, if I tell you you can't, that I won't take this late because your excuse isn't any good, it's not because I dislike you or think you're a bad person or anything else. It's just the deadline has come and gone. Now, some professors will offer you the opportunity to turn work in late with penalties. We recommend to instructors, and they're free to amend this as they see fit, our recommendation is that they dock you 2% off your grade for every day late that an assignment is, and to take no work that's more than 2 weeks late. So if it was due in week two and you didn't turn it in until week five, that's 3 weeks late, they're probably going to say no. Okay? If you turn it in a week late, they may say, yeah, I'll take it. It's going to be a 10% reduction, you know, 2% for each day or 14%, whatever, you know, that figures out to be, or I guess it'd be 7 days. Yeah, it'd be 14% or whatever. But you get the idea. So make sure you understand what your individual instructors say about that. They'll usually communicate that to you. You know, you should always strive to get your work in on time. That should always be our goal, to do everything when it's due so that we don't have to get into these situations. But sometimes it happens, and we understand that. Okay? So let's go on down a little bit more. Tonight we're in session one. In this first session, we're being introduced to DCC culture and learn about spiritual disciplines and some other things, how to create a PowerPoint describing your goals and how DCC can help you with those goals. You'll begin your journey through Humble's freedom from the tyranny of the urgent and discuss time management and learn about MLA format and writing style and plagiarism, which will come in handy for your final project, which is a very short research paper, very short. It's only a couple of pages. It's supposed to be 2 to 2.5 pages. This is not a big encyclopedia or anything. That you're going to do an online learning readiness assessment, which will help you confirm whether or not you have the technology and skills you need to succeed in the online program. And you'll learn to set up a Word document to comply with MLA standards. Okay. Some of that we're going to do tonight. Some of it you're going to do between now and the time you watch the second session. Now, the way I've set this up, students who take the regular DCC 101, where there's three consecutive weeks of class, they get 3 weeks to get their work done. You're going to get a full 6 weeks to get yours done, because I'm not going to require that you have this work turned in. And, well, let me put, I think I put the dates up here. So tonight it's February the 20th, right? So this is session one tonight. Notice that you have until March 12th to finish the work from session one, because I'm going to consider session one or session two to begin on March the 13th, even though we won't meet physically. So you'll have from March 13th to 26th to do the second, what other students only have a week to do in the regular offering. And you'll also have then from March 27th till April 9th to do session three. Part of the reason I did this is because I think most of you, if not all of you, are taking at least one more class besides DCC 101 right now, right? Jimmy, you're in another class, probably starts next week, right?
It does, on the 24th.
Yeah, okay, so that's...
Composition 2.
Yeah, that's Thursday night, right? Comp 2
Thursday.
With Dr. Brunson, I believe, probably Dr. Hal Brunson. So yeah, so there you go. See, the what's going on, or not, the 24th would be Tuesday night, yeah, that's right. Thursday's the 27th, yeah. Okay, so anyway, the 26th, never mind. I'm getting the dates all fouled up. But anyhow, so part of the reason I'm stretching it for you is I know, like in the last group, DCC 101 for most of them was the only class they were taking. So to only give them 3 weeks seemed fair. But for you guys who are taking another 6 week class on top of this class right now, I thought stretching out the deadline till the end of the session was appropriate for you all. Try to give you a hand. And frankly, Comp 2 is going to be really helpful with writing this little paper that you write for this class. You're gonna have a real leg up on those who aren't taking comp or haven't taken comp, because Dr. Brunson will make you a writer really fast.
Okay.
he's a great, great teacher of English and writing, and it's a passion for him. And when he teaches, you can see he just loves helping students learn how to write and become really good writers. So you're in good hands with Dr. Brunson. You'll really enjoy him, I think. He'll scare you. I tell you that the first night I watch students come in and he starts talking about the demands of the class, and they get the deer in the headlight look. By the end of class, he's eased all their fears. So just know that when you first walk in, he's going to start saying, you know, I'm going to count off for every, you know, comma splice this much and that. And you're like, but he also gives you opportunities to rewrite. You know, the first paper you turn in, he gives it back to you and says, make corrections. You make corrections and your grade goes way up. You don't make corrections, your grade stays down where it was. So, you know, he gives you opportunities to do things. So you'll be in good. Some of you are going to be taking, I think some of you are probably maybe going into the Introduction to Biblical Interpretation class, where you'll be using the Logos Bible software and things like that. I don't know all the different classes you'll all be going into, but all of our instructors, you'll be in good hands with any of them. So let me scroll up here and let's hit a few other things. What time do we got? 7 o'clock. Okay, we're going to go a few more minutes and then we'll take a little break maybe. Since it's just you and me, Jimmy, we can break whenever we want to, I guess. Stop the recording and then come back, you know. So you didn't really have any homework due tonight. Most classes, there's an assignment summary every week that you can look at. So here's the assignment summary for session one. I hope I got it straightened out right. That looks like a lot of stuff, I know. It really isn't as bad as it looks. But what happens is on this checklist, there are, for example, anything that's in red there is a written assignment or a discussion forum or a quiz or other activity that you have to do. Okay? Anything that's in yellow is only things that you have to do if you've watched the class recording. So everybody but Jimmy is going to have to do those things. The black text is things that you have to read or look at, but not have to submit anything over. And the gray text is simply things that are additional or recommended resources that you might or might not use. So as you go down this checklist, you can see the first red thing you see is post a personal introduction. The next one you see is participate in this discussion forum on time management, and then do a reflection on time management, update your Moodle profile picture, take the online learning readiness assessment called Smarter Measure, Jimmy, you already did that, I think, actually, so you're off the hook on that one. Do a follow-up session on it with me, create a PowerPoint on DCC culture, and so forth. Anything that's in red, and there's a quiz to take and things like that. So all these things will be there. You'll see this assignment summary, and you can check things off as you do them. Just click it, and like, for example, once you've posted your personal introduction, you can check. Actually, I think that'll check it off for you. But anyway, so you can click, and it'll show that you've done it. I'm going to uncheck it there, but you get the idea. Each week is, or each, I'm saying weeks, even though we have more than weeks, because that's how we typically do things each week, week one, week two, week three, week four, and so forth. So each week is going to have, it's going to be set up with a before class section, a during class section, and if we scroll way down here, an after class section. Okay. Tonight in the before class section, some of you did this, not all of you, because we recommended that you try to do it, but this is the personal introduction. So let's just see who all has posted one. So Jeanette, Jimmy, and Martha, you've each posted yours. Okay. One of you actually replied to the other one, it looks like. It looks like Martha Martha replied to yours, it looks like, Jimmy. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. Introduced herself to you as well. You know, and so I'm not going to take time to read these in class. You can read these on the forum. I'll put one of my own up there in a little bit too, probably. Just it's not fair me making you guys do this and me not being willing to do it, right? So there you go. So that's the only before class thing for tonight. During class, you'll always see, one of the things you'll see is getting into the web conferences for class. That's where you can go find the link for the live web conference. And so if you're on a computer, you can just click this link and it'll automatically open up Zoom on your on your computer, your phone. It'll work on an Android or an iPhone, iOS device as well. I can, I do Zoom conferences on my iPad, on my iPhone, on my computer, whatever the case. Usually if you just click that link, it'll automatically take you in. Some classes will have a password that you'll have to enter. If that's the case, the password will be on the site here for you to see. There's not a password for this class, so don't worry about it. But some of our classwords do have a password you have to enter. Now, we usually go live at 6 o'clock. Usually we have the web conference up and running around 5:30-ish. You can join in, but the professor might not be in the room yet. If it's me, I know I won't be because the cafeteria here doesn't open for supper until 5:30. So so I run over between 5:30 and 6 and scarf down my meal and get back to the classroom to start teaching class. And then I'm really hungry when I get home because 5:30 is awfully early to be eating your supper in my book. I like to eat my supper more about 7, you know, and that way I don't. So I end up eating too much because I go home and eat another meal basically before I go to bed, which is, doctors always tell me that's the worst time to eat, right before you go to bed, you know. Yeah. Anybody that's a fitness person knows better than that, but when you're hungry, right? Like I said, the library stuff, I'll put the link up for the recording on here. There'll be under where it says the DCC library is for all students there, starting tomorrow or maybe even tonight after class, one of the others. You'll see a link there where you can watch the recording by Mrs. Reynolds. It's about 30 or 40 minutes long. It was the first part of class when I taught this the last time. But also some links here for how to use some of the things as well. Now tonight we're also going to talk about MLA. What MLA is and why we use it and what it's for. Okay. If any of you have done college work before or even sometimes in high school, there are style manuals that, and MLA is not the only one. MLA stands for the Modern Language Association. It's one style sheet. Some of you may have used other ones. The Chicago Manual of Style is one that's out there. The one by Kate Turabian is out there. The APA, the American Psychological Association, has their own. In fact, I will tell you this. If you take psychology classes here at the college or business classes here at the college, they're going to want you to write in APA format as opposed to MLA. In Bible classes and in humanities classes here at the college, we use MLA. So I'm teaching you MLA. Really, once you've learned MLA, the difference between MLA and APA are slight enough that you won't have any problem shifting gears into APA. And your psychology professors and your business professors will have instructions for you when you get into those classes about what those differences are. Sometimes the differences are really subtle. Like, for example, when you're doing a bibliography at the end of a paper, if you have more than one author's name, if you're using MLA, you take the first author and you put his last name with a comma and then his first name, and then you put and you write the rest of the authors normally, first name, last name. So like if you had, if it was a book by, say, Joe Smith and Bill Jones, it would say Smith, comma, what did I say his name was? Bill, I don't remember, whatever Jones's first name was. So it would be Smith, comma, his first name, and Bill Jones, or whoever his name was. If you're doing APA, you go last name, then first name for all the authors. So you would say Smith, comma, Frank, and Jones, comma, Bill. It's a real subtle difference, you know. There's more differences than just that. But like I said, they're very subtle, very slight. It's not like you're going to have to learn a whole different language or something, you know. It's not like I just learned German and now I got to learn Vietnamese. No, it's nothing dramatic as that. But we use MLA. Why do we use MLA? Or any form really? Well, the fact is, very few people like doing documentation and citation, but it's also very important that you learn how to do it right. I'm not going to play this for you, but there's a 7-minute and 33-second audio recording by Dr. Mark Halen, the chair of our Bible department, where he gives some explanation about why we use it. To listen to it, just click this arrow right here and it'll play for you on whatever device you're using. It's an MP3 file that you can listen to. But the bottom line is it's a way for us to make sure that we're giving proper credit to the sources that we use, and we're putting our information in a way that can be understood by people and things like that. So the MLA handbook, when you buy it, not only do you get the physical book, but when you buy it, you know, the inside the back cover of your book, there's a scratch off, like a lottery ticket scratch off or whatever. It has a code number. And when you get that, you go to MLAhandbook.org and you set up an account and you enter that, and it gives you free access to the entire book online. So I'm in the MLA handbook right now. Everything that's in the book I have right here. In fact, I hardly ever open the book anymore. I just go online and use this because it's easy. When it comes to reference books, I prefer online. When I'm just reading a novel or something, I kind of like paper, that's fine. But when I'm doing research and stuff, man, online is so much faster and easier to search and find things. So I have the entire text of the entire MLA handbook at my fingertips, my keyboard tips, and I can read it on my phone, I can read it on my iPad, I can read it on my computer, wherever it is. So this is the entire MLA handbook that I have at my disposal, okay? And it gives, there's all these different things. And you're going to be assigned actually reading from the MLA handbook during this, you know, to complete by March the 12th and take a quiz over it. So we'll talk about that a little bit here. So let me go back to the course site though. These are the things that there's going to be reading in the MLA handbook that we're going to look at. So chapters two and four in the MLA handbook, you need to get familiar with, okay? Because you're going to take a quiz over that at the end of this session or the end of this section and everything. What are those sections? I mean, what are chapters two and four about? Well, let's go. I'm glad you asked. If I can get up here, I'll show you. If I can get out of this to get back to that tab. Let me see if I can close this tab. I can get this thing to disappear up here. It's supposed to auto hide. It's not doing it. There we go. Now I can do it. Okay, so chapter 2 is about plagiarism and academic integrity, and chapter 4 is called the format of the research paper. Plagiarism and academic integrity are huge issues for us, not just us at DCC, but for the academic world in general. Plagiarism, by definition, is it actually comes from the Latin word for kidnapper, okay, which is a bad sounding thing, right? It means to commit, but for us, it means to commit literary theft or to present something as something new and original with us, which we actually got from an already existing source, okay? Plagiarism involves two kinds of wrongs. It either involves using another person's ideas, information, or expressions without acknowledging that that person's work constitutes intellectual theft, or passing off another person's ideas and things as your own rather than theirs. Sometimes it's done accidentally. We see a lot of plagiarism cases where the student just didn't understand what they were obligated to cite and what they weren't, you know, because there's things like common knowledge that come into play. For example, if I say to someone, Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president of the United States of America, do I have to cite a source for that? Generally, no, because that's general information that most Americans know without having to go to an encyclopedia to look it up. But if I say something about, you know, well, on the night of April, the whatever, 1864, President Lincoln met with his cabinet to discuss this or that, I probably need to cite that, tell where I got that from, because that's not common knowledge, what he was doing on one particular night. You know, now, if you say, on such and such a night, he was assassinated at Ford's Theater, you don't need to cite that because, again, that's fairly common. I don't exactly remember the date myself. I know it was in April of 1865, but other than that, I don't remember the exact date. But anyway, the point is, you know, but if you say, you know, if you're talking about a cabinet meeting he had where they talked about the 13th Amendment or something like that, then you need to cite that. That's not general information that most people know, okay? So there's a little bit of common sense stuff that runs through it, but generally speaking, you know, anything that you got from somewhere other than from in your own head, okay, like if you read it in a book, if you saw it on a website, if you saw it in a movie, if you got it in a personal interview with someone, if you took it down in notes from a class, from a professor, those are all things that you should document and properly cite in your paper so you give credit to the people. It's not only about taking credit, but it's also about taking responsibility. There have actually been some fairly high-profile cases in recent years of people who were found guilty of plagiarism who suffered some pretty severe consequences for it. There have been authors who had sold lots of books and things that suddenly were found guilty of plagiarism, and they lost their book contracts and lost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in the process. There was a high-level politician in Germany, I forget exactly what level, but I mean very, very close to the top, near like what we would call a president, who resigned their position a few years ago because it had been discovered that when they were working on their PhD, they had plagiarized material, and it called into question their honesty and integrity, and they resigned their political thing. There was a historian who was pretty well known not too long ago who was exposed for fudging on some stuff. She had used some material, calling it her own, that really wasn't her own, that it was someone else's. So that, you know, it could catch up to you eventually. In some cases, it could even become a legal offense. If you take somebody's copyrighted material and pass it off in something that you're selling or something like that, you can be fined, maybe even do jail time for it. So that's not going to usually happen on a research paper here at the college. What are the consequences of plagiarism? Well, they can range. There's a variety of different things. If it's unintentional, if we deem that it's unintentional, then it may simply mean that your instructor gives you another opportunity to fix what you did wrong and turn it in again. If it's deemed to be intentional, especially with the intent to deceive, then that's a more ethical situation that we deal with a little more broadly. Academic integrity issues are typically the kinds of things that we have to be careful about, just keeping them between the student and the professor. Because what can happen is if I catch you cheating in my class, and I call you in and I say, look, I'm looking at this paper you wrote, and doggone it, if I can't find all this, it looks to me like you just cut and pasted this off of Wikipedia or whatever, you know. And I say to you, please don't do this again. We're going to keep it just between you and me. And you say, okay, I won't do it again. And you fix the paper and turn it in. And you go to your next class. And you do the same thing. And that professor says, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to give you a second chance. Please don't do it again. You say, okay, I'll never do it again. And this can go on for 5, 6, 7, 8 classes, So because of that, because it can become a pattern for students who are allowed to perpetuate it, typically if you're found to be guilty of academic dishonesty, whether it's plagiarism or cheating on a test or something like that, then that goes beyond just the classroom. In other words, you're probably going to be probably referred to our dean of students, who may convene our ethical conduct committee to bring you before them and talk about possible penalties. At the furthest end of at the bottom end, it can be correcting and helping you learn how to do it right, so you don't make the same mistake twice. At the opposite end, it can be failing an entire class because of it. And if you get failed in a class and your final grade for the class is a failing grade because of academic dishonesty, you can be assigned a grade that's called an XF. It's not just an F, it's an XF. And on your the key on the transcript explains what grades mean. And the XF grade is an F for academic dishonesty. You don't want that on your transcript. That looks really bad. Okay, and I don't know, we haven't had to give out many XFs, I don't think, in our day since we started doing it, but we had to do some. And it's a sad thing to have to do to somebody, especially at a college like ours. I'm not naive, but I'd like to think that, at Dallas Christian College, where Christian is not just our middle name, okay, like it might be at some other colleges that have that in the middle of their name. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to be judgmental about it. But we take that seriously. But the truth is, we've had students, they were taking an exam in a Bible class and they had an open Bible in their lap looking for answers. And I'm like, can you not see the incongruency there, that this is a Bible class and you're cheating by looking up answers in your Bible? You don't find anything, any kind of a disconnect morally and ethically there. And I'm not saying this happens every day or even every semester, but it has happened, people are people and temptation is temptation. And we all succumb sometimes. So anyway, but plagiarism is a very important issue that has to be dealt with. So some more things about it. Again, the consequences of plagiarism, I've told you about what they are here. And again, this is still, this gives you some of the broader implications from a societal, not just a college culture, but it talks about penalties that people can suffer for it and things like that, how it can affect careers and things. The other thing that makes plagiarism a hot button issue is because the ease with which it can be done. Today with the web, cutting and pasting is simple. I can take whole papers. You may have seen them. There are people who advertise on the net, on the web. You need a paper? Pay me money, I'll write your paper. I guarantee it'll make an A. So they'll send you the paper all ready to go. All you got to do is write your name on it and turn it in. That's dishonesty at its most highest form, it seems to me. To pay for somebody to write your paper for you and turn it in with your name on it as if you did the work. You can do it yourself. I mean, you can go around and just cut and paste things and make a good sounding paper out of other people's words without crediting them. Here's the thing. It's not wrong to do research and use other people's material. What's wrong is when you use other people's material and you don't tell us that you're using other people's material. There are such things as quotation marks, okay, and citations in the text of your paper to say, I got this from so-and-so, you know, this came from N.T. Wright, or this came from John Steinbeck, or this came from, you know, whoever it was. There are ways to let us know that this information, and that's fine, that's research. You should do that. Where the problem is when you do it without telling us where you got it, where it makes it seem like it was your own ideas. And while it's easier than ever to cut and paste stuff into your document, it's also easier than ever for us to find out that you did it. In the old days, when you had to sit and like type word for word out of a book, I might not know about that book that you're copying from. And so I might not catch you. If you cut and paste from the web today, all I got to do is put a search string of about 8 of your words into Google, yeah, and I'll find the document you got it from.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that hard to catch you, okay? So don't think that you're so slick that you could never get caught, because it's not really hard at all. It's easy to do. It's also easy to catch. And because of that, we have to be vigilant to help people know how to cite things properly. There's things in the handbook that tells you, you know, when to cite, when not to cite, and those kinds of things. And what is unintentional plagiarism? Because we often find people falling into this. Okay, so the purpose of a research paper is to synthesize previous research and scholarship with your ideas on the subject. Therefore, you should feel free to use other persons' words, facts, and thoughts in your research paper. But the material you borrow must not be presented as if it were your own creation. When you write your research paper, remember that you must document everything that you borrow, not only direct quotations and paraphrases, but also information and ideas. Often plagiarism in student writing is unintentional, as when an elementary school pupil assigned to do a report on a certain topic copies down word for word everything on the subject in an encyclopedia. Unfortunately, some students continue to take this approach in high school and even in college, not realizing that it constitutes plagiarism. To guard against the possibility of unintentional plagiarism during research and writing, keep careful notes that always distinguish among three types of material: your ideas, your summaries and paraphrases of others' ideas and facts, and exact wording you copy from sources. Plagiarism sometimes happens because researchers do not keep precise records of their reading, and by the time they return to their notes, they have forgotten whether their summaries and paraphrases contain quoted material that is poorly marked or unmarked. Presenting an author's exact wording without marking it as a quotation is plagiarism, even if you cite the source. For this reason, recording only quotations is the most reliable method of note-taking in substantial research projects, especially for beginning students. It is the surest way when you work with notes to avoid unintentional plagiarism. Similar problems can occur in notes kept electronically. When you copy and paste passages, make sure you add quotation marks around them. Another kind of unintentional plagiarism happens when students write research papers in a second language. In an effort to avoid grammatical errors, they may copy the structure of an author's sentences. When replicating grammatical patterns, they sometimes inadvertently plagiarize the author's ideas, information, words, and expressions. You probably will not write any papers here in a second language, so that's probably not one you really have to worry about. If you realize after handing a paper in that you accidentally plagiarized an author's work, you should report the problem to your instructor as soon as possible. In this way, you eliminate the element of fraud. You may receive a lower grade than you had hoped for, but getting a lower grade is better than failing a course or being expelled. The most blatant form of plagiarism is to obtain and submit as your own a paper written by someone else. Other less conspicuous forms of plagiarism include the failure to give appropriate acknowledgement when repeating or paraphrasing another's wording, when taking a particularly apt phrase, and when paraphrasing another's argument or presenting another's line of thinking. So, for example, here's some examples. Says, suppose, for example, that you want to use the material in the following passage, which appears on page 625 of an essay by a woman named Wendy Martin in the book Columbia Literary History of the United States. So here's the original story. It says, some of Dickinson's most powerful poems express her firmly held conviction that life cannot be fully comprehended without an understanding of death. Okay? It says, if you write the following sentence without any documentation, you have plagiarized because you borrowed an author's wording without acknowledgement, even though you changed its form. So if you were to write, Emily Dickinson firmly believed that we cannot fully comprehend life unless we also understand death, even though you did not do a direct quotation, you still need to acknowledge the book that that came from, because even though you reworded it, it's still not your original idea. It was Wendy Martin who wrote the book, who wrote Columbia Literary History. It was her idea. So if you do this, whoops, went too far. Sorry, coming back. A little carried away on the scrolling there. Okay. So, but you can present it like this, for example, it says, as Wendy Martin has suggested, Emily Dickinson firmly believed that we cannot fully comprehend life unless we also understand death. And notice, put the page number of Martin's book there. It acknowledged who the author was and where in her book you could find it, page 625. The source is indicated with the name of the author and a page reference in parentheses, preferably at the end of the sentence. Then at the end of the paper, there's a page called the Works Cited List, and that's where you would put this. So you'd put her name, the title of the article, the book that it was found in, and all this information. There's, and the MLA handbook gives you all kinds of information about how to do a works cited page to show you how to do this. But this would be at the back. So as I'm reading your paper, I can read it. It says Martin or Wendy Martin. So I can go to the back page and say, oh yeah, it's Wendy Martin's article on Emily Dickinson in the Columbia Literary. That's where this came from. And it's on page 625. Okay, so that's great. Okay. And I'm not going to go through all these. You need to go ahead and read this the entire chapter 2 here before next session, because there's going to be a quiz on it at the end of the session. So at the end of before March the 13th. So, but you know, this is chapter 2 is about plagiarism. Chapter 4, I went too go far enough on that. Chapter 4, which we'll talk about a little bit, is the format of the research paper. We're not going to talk too much about that, but we will talk a little bit about how to set up a page for MLA. MLA is a very simple format. It doesn't require much in the way of you use the same font throughout. You don't use any bold for titles or anything like that. It looks kind of boring to a lot of people, I suppose, but it's very simple to do. So let me just show you real quickly with a Word document how easy it is to set up a paper to be in proper MLA style. So let me go into Microsoft Word. Is Microsoft Office on this computer? Yes, there we go. I'm like, oh no. And MS Word, okay. So I'm just gonna open up a blank document here. I know that some word processors, well, this is the first time anybody's used Microsoft Office on this computer. I don't really want to do a tutorial. How do I get out of this? I think maybe if I, hang on. Okay, I'm good to go now. All right, so I'm going to just open a blank document, though, because it's very simple. First thing you want to know is that you have one-inch margins all around. And in Microsoft Office these days, in Microsoft Word, that's the default, one-inch margins all the way around. So I can check that just to be sure by going up to Page Layout, maybe. Oh, why is it not responding? Oh, now it is. Okay. So Page Layout, and I can check my margins here. So normal is 1 inch all the way around, so I can make sure I'm in that. Then the next thing I'm going to want to do is insert a header. So I'll go to the Insert tab here, and I'm going to go to Header right here. Okay, and I'm going to choose this first choice, which is just a blank header. And notice it's got a thing there that says type here, a gray box. I'm going to tab over twice. One takes me to the middle and one takes me all the way to flush right. And all I'm going to type here is my last name. Okay, that's it. And put a space. And then I'm going to go back up here to the insert thing and see where it says page number. I'm going to click that. And I'm going to go to current position, and I'm going to choose the first choice, which is plain number. Okay? And then I can just double click down here and it gets me out of the header. Now on every page of my paper, including the first page, up in the top right hand corner, there's going to be my last name, and the page number will change with each page. My name will stay the same, my last name, but on every page there'll be a new page number. Okay? So then I can go up here to the top corner of my actual text. And I want to set up my paragraphs this way. First thing I want to do is take out the spacing between lines here where it says 8. I want to take that down to 0. Then I'm going to change this from multiple to double spaced. Okay? And then I'm going to click OK. And now I'm going to type, I'm going to prepare my document then for what I'm doing here. So I'm going to type in my name, I'm going to type in my professor's name, okay, I'm going to type in the course number, and I'm going to put today's date. Okay, and I'm only going to do this once, and I'm only going to do it on this page. Then I'm going to come down here, and then this is the one place where I'm going to actually center text. I'm not going to change the font. I'm not going to add any extra lines, but I'm going to center the text and write the title of my paper. Okay, now I'm going to go back to left margin over here, and then I'm going to adjust my paragraphs one more time, because now I'm going to want to indent each paragraph by 1/2 inch. So I'm going to go to first line. Notice it's already set for 1/2 inch. And notice how my cursor moved over 1/2 inch. So now when I start typing, so forth. Notice how the first line is indented, but the lines afterward are not. When I get to the end of a paragraph, I hit enter, and I start a new paragraph. Okay, and that's basically what you have to do to set up your paper. It's that simple. Everything else should flow that way. If you have different sections in your paper, like if your paper has an introduction and some different points, you can set those off simply by taking out the 1/2 inch, like. For one line, you can take out the first line indent like this and come back here and say, you know, section one, whatever you're going to say for that. Then you would come back in and start indenting again. And go back to, you know. And so forth, okay? So, you know, it's very simple to set it up. Very, very easy. It doesn't take a lot of effort to learn how to do it. And I know that there, you know, a lot of WordPressers have templates and things like that. If you want to use them, you can try them. But I've always found that just doing it myself and knowing what I'm doing and doing it myself has stood me in pretty good stead. I've never really had a lot of problems that way. Some things to remember, though. Some special things to remember with quotations. If you're doing a direct quotation, something that would go in quotation marks, it's word for word quotation. If it takes up less than 4 lines on the page, just type it like normal with quotation marks around it. If it's a lengthier quotation, like maybe a section of scripture or something like that, for that, you're going to want to do what's called a block quote. Okay, with a block quote, you come back to paragraph, and you're going to indent not just the first line, but you're going to indent the entire quotation by a half inch. Only the left, not the right, just the left. And so it's going to start like this. It's going to start here and so forth and go across. And when it comes back around, it's going to be even with a half inch indent. Generally, you introduce a block quote on the line before with something like, I'm going to cross out what, oops, if I can, here, I'll do it this way. Okay, and then you go into the block quotation. Usually use a colon to set it off. When you're doing a block quotation, you don't have to put quotation marks around it because the fact that it's in a block like that lets us know it's a quotation. Okay. My advice to you is not to use many lengthy block quotations. Learn how to paraphrase things so that you don't have just a whole bunch of block quotations. Better to have, in my opinion anyway, 3, 4, 5 word quotations as opposed to real lengthy quotations. Learning how to take multiple sources and take the material and blend it together while still giving credit to the sources is a better way of doing research than just putting out direct quotation after direct quotation after direct quotation from different authors. Okay. So anyway, that's really the simple way to set one up and get the format right. And all that information about how to do it is in the MLA handbook. You'll see it there when you start using it. But there, you know, there's margins. We talked about that. Text formatting, we talked about that. The heading and title. It'll probably give you an example of that here. Or it tells you what I told you to do and things like that. So, oh, that was text formatting. Heading and title over here. Okay. So yeah, like I showed you there, see how I set mine up. It's showing everything I just did. It's showing you there what I did. So, anyway, okay. So enough of that. You're going to read these two sections 2 and 4, and you'll take a quiz over it after you've read it to help make sure that you understood it. And you'll have more than one opportunity to take the quiz also. It's a multiple opportunity quiz. If you don't do well the first time, you can study and come back and take it a second. I know you can take it at least twice, maybe even 3 times to get your best grade on it. There's several different documents here that you can use besides the MLA handbook itself. We have this little thing here around here. We just call this Ham Snyder. Its title is actually A Student's Guide to the MLA Handbook. We call it Ham Snyder because of who wrote it. It was written by Dr. Clay Ham, who is our former dean here at the college, and Dr. Kara Snyder, who is still an English professor here at the college. They wrote this several years ago. It's a companion guide to your MLA handbook, and it's on every course site that we have, every Moodle site. You can click on it. Anyway, it gives you some of the most salient points. It also gives you some of the things that are kind of special to use with Bible stuff and things like that. It even provides a sample paper at the back to help you see. So here's what it gives. It includes quick reference for MLA, or in other words, 7 ways to look like you know MLA. MLA parenthetical documentation, how to cite where you got that quotation or idea. Sample entries for a bibliography or works cited, how to list books, articles, and electronic sources. Some details about MLA, like how to capitalize a title, two pages that illustrate a title page if your professor requires one, and then a sample paper in MLA style, what a good paper should look like. And that's all included in this little 29-page document that you can review on your own and read. I would encourage you to read the whole thing. It doesn't take long. You'll learn a lot from it. There's also a thing called the Educated Dummies Guide to MLA, which is a citations obligations guide, helps you know whether or not you need to cite a source or not. It helps you answer those questions. Is this common knowledge stuff, or is this something that I need to make a citation from? There's something that will become more important to you as you get into Bible classes, how to cite from the Logos Bible software, which you're going to be using later on in those classes. So once you get into principles of biblical or in introduction to biblical interpretation or Old Testament survey or New Testament survey or any Bible class that uses the Logos Bible software, they'll be important for you to know how to do that there. Here's a template for MLA that we have on the site. Notice if you open it up, I just got a message from somebody. See, this is what I just did a while ago. You could just go in and type over that and have what you wanted, or you can just set up your document the way I did, you know, to show. Because see, everything that I did, so you would double click up here and I could replace Ham with Hardy. And then I could come down here and replace Ham with my name and my professor's name and my class. And then I could start typing my own, get rid of this other stuff and start typing in my own text, and it would be in the proper format.
Then from there on, your computer will probably will. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's a plagiarism handout and an intentional versus unintentional plagiarism handout that you should have a look at. Excuse me just one second. I'm going to stop the recording while I do this.
Okay.
Okay. Welcome back to the second half of class, everyone. We've been joined by Jeanette in the live web conference now, along with Jimmy, who's already been in the room with me for the first half of class. Glad to have you with us, Jeanette, and all of you are going to be watching the recording. Glad to have you watching this. We had been talking in the first half of class about plagiarism and the problems with that and how to avoid it a little bit, talking about things that you need to pay attention to with regard to that. There are documents on the website that we were looking at that you should familiarize yourself with and things. I also want to talk with you about what's going to be coming up in the future in this class. As I mentioned in the first half of class, you're going to have more time to complete DCC 101 than the students who took it in the first 6 weeks. They had 3 weeks to get it done, but I've spread it out for you to take up about 6 to 7 weeks. For example, the first notice here in the after class section for this first session, this stuff that's in the after class section is not due until the 12th of March. So you have not quite a month. You have about 3 weeks to finish this first bit of stuff. So that's quite a bit of time. And as I mentioned in the first half of class, I did that because a lot of you are taking more than one class right now. You're taking this class, and you're also taking a full 6 weeks class of some kind. Is that the case with you as well, Jeanette?
Hello?
Yeah, are you also taking another class starting next week as well?
Yes, I'm going to take the English 2 composition.
Okay. Jimmy will be in that class with you. You two will be in that class together with Dr. Brunson. So
right.
that's a good class to get you started with. So that's why I've stretched out the assignments for this class to give you more time for them, because I knew that in my previous DCC 101 class that I taught just the last 3 weeks, that was the only class those students were in. So I didn't mind making them have a lot of work due in just 1 week. But in your case, and believe me, in Dr. Brunson's class, you're going to write a lot because it's a writing class. The thing about writing is you can't get good at it unless you actually do it. And he's going to make you do it. Okay, that's his job. So you're going to have plenty of work to do in there. So I've made it a little less demand. I've not taken out any of the work, but I've given you longer to get it done. So, for example, so let's look at the after class section so you can get an idea of what's going to be coming up in the next few weeks. First of all, the first thing in every after class section is where you'll be able to watch the class recording when it's available. Now, actually, this is going to be available before March 21st. It's going to be should say February 21st, tomorrow. It'll be available, not March 21st. That's a typo on my part. But when you do watch the class recording rather than participating live in class, you're obligated then to submit notes over that class. And the way you do that is you'll come down here to where it says participation session one note submission. You'll click on that and you'll see a post, and I haven't put it there yet. I'll put a question up here. When I get the link to the recording posted, I'll put a question. It'll just say, post your notes here, basically. And you'll click on that and you'll reply by uploading your notes. You need to upload your notes as like a Microsoft Word document, something I can open with Microsoft Word. And also then ask two questions. Here's the other thing you have to do. It says, submit notes from the recording of the current week's session, which show evidence of having viewed the entire recording. Your notes should be in Microsoft Word format and should be submitted using the attachment feature in the discussion forum. And secondly, along with your notes, also submit two substantive questions or comments relating to what was covered in this week's class session. All the questions and comments will be considered by your professor for possible discussion at the beginning of the next class session. So the way our classes work is this. The first week of every class starts at 6 p.m. for everyone. Okay? The second through sixth weeks of classes start at 6:30 for those who are participating live. From 6 o'clock till 6:30, the professor will be in the room answering the questions that were submitted by people when they gave their notes. We call this our virtual office hours. No one is required to be there live for that. So if you're coming to campus for class that night and you don't want to get here until 6:30, that's perfectly fine. Or if you're logging into the live web conference that night and you don't want to log in until 6:30, that's perfectly fine. If you want to come at 6 and sit in on the virtual office hours, either in the classroom or in the live web conference, you are perfectly welcome to do so. The virtual office hours are held in the classroom with the web conference going. It's being recorded. You can come in live. You can even ask a question during virtual office hours if you want to. It is, as the name suggests, a chance for you to talk to your professor. Many of you are never going to have a chance to visit your professor in his or her office because you don't even live around here and couldn't come here very well to visit them anyway. So this is a chance for you to. And again, of course, this is not the only time you can talk with the professor. You can call a professor in his office. You can send her an email, whatever, you know, to discuss. But this is one way. It's a set aside time each week. So weeks 2 through 6, class begins at 6:30 with the virtual office hours session beginning at 6. Our classes are typically scheduled to run until about 9:30 in the evening. So you need to make sure that you've blocked, if you're going to do live, make sure you know that it's 6:30 to 9:30, usually with at least one break like we took a while ago, kind of in the middle. I suspect that we may not go fully till 9:30 tonight. Based on the material I'm still going to try to cover, we're probably going to get done around 9-ish, I would say, tonight, rather than 9:30. Hope that doesn't make you feel bad. But it's Friday night. Everybody wants to get out of here and things, and I understand that. I'm like that. Like I said, in the first, what I was telling Jimmy earlier, this is my third night this week to teach, so I'm kind of running on fumes a little bit. So anyway, so that's what you do if you watch the recording, and you know, things happen sometimes. You know, if you come to class live and for some reason you need to leave class while class is still going on, maybe, you know, you get called out on an emergency, or maybe you just need to go because of work, then just watch the recording of the part that you missed and submit notes over that, okay? But the way that you get counted present in class is by participating in one of these three ways, either by being live in class, live in the web conference, or submitting notes over the recording. That's how we count you present, okay? Now, let me say this. You in addition to getting counted present or absent, there's also a participation grade that you get assigned, okay? Just because you get counted present doesn't ensure you get 100% for participation. If you upload notes that only show having watched half the class, then you shouldn't expect to get 100% for your participation. Or if you come to class and you won't participate in discussion, you won't answer any questions, then you can expect to see a drop in your grade for participation there as well. Or if you're in the live web conference and, you know, I ask you something and I don't get any response from you, you know, and I'm like, well, I guess they went off to the kitchen or something while class was going on, something like that. And I say, okay, I guess I have to knock some points off because they obviously weren't participating at that time. So Attendance and participation, while connected, are not entirely the same. You can get counted present, but maybe still not get a full 100% for participation if you don't really participate. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Other things that are in the after class session that you'll be doing now between now and March the 12th, there's reading in Hummel, the little book. You want to hold your book up so they can see it on the camera there? All of you should get a copy of this. It's called Freedom from Tyranny of the Urgent by Charles Hummel. You can put it down now, thanks. Before the 12th, you're supposed to read chapters 1 through 3, okay? And it's not a very big book to begin with. It won't take you long to read those. You're supposed to read chapters 1 through 3 before March the 12th. During that time also, you're going to enter into a discussion forum on the subject. So a discussion forum looks like this. You're going to read chapters 1 through 3, and you're going to focus on page 19. It says, post an answer to the following questions. After you have posted your answers, read through the other students' postings. Please give a reflective response to at least two of your classmates' postings. So you're supposed to give three examples of things in your life that you consider important as opposed to urgent. Give three examples of things in your life that you would consider urgent as opposed to important. And that's going to be explained in the book, what those different sweetens that is. So don't freak out. That's why you're going to read the book first. And then thirdly, what criteria would you use to distinguish urgent and important things? So to submit that, you're just going to click on add a new discussion topic right here. And it's going to open up a box here for you to type in. So you're going to give it a subject, you know, like you might say important versus urgent or whatever. And then you type your answers in the box here. Okay. When you're done, you'll come down here. And you'll go all the way down to the bottom. You won't need to attach anything to this, really. And you'll click post to forum, okay? I'm gonna go ahead and post this. I'm gonna take it down in a minute too, but it'll tell you that it's there. And now when I go here, I look and there's my post that I just made. Now, when I see someone has made a post, then I can click on their post and I can reply to it right here. So when I hit reply, it's going to open up another box to reply to them, and I can type whatever I want to type. And again, hit post to forum. And now we should see not only my original post, but my reply to my own post as well. Let's see if I'm right. Yeah, so here's the original post, and notice how the replies are indented. Okay. So when you're participating in this, you'll make an initial post of your own, okay? And then you'll look at the other students and you'll reply to at least two of them with a response. Like you might say, you know, it was interesting that you said this, but I wondered why, or something like that. You know, it's a chance for you to enter into, it's a discussion forum for you to discuss things with each other. I will also tell you that when it comes to these discussion forums, as a professor, I don't get heavily involved in them, okay, because they're supposed to be you all talking to each other. And I've learned over the years that the moment that a professor jumps into the discussion, it usually grinds the discussion to a halt. Everybody thinks, well, the professor has spoken. I guess he gets the last word. And that's not what I want to convey at all. I want you trust me when I can tell you that I don't expect for me to be the only person that you learn from in this class. I expect for you to learn from each other as well. I expect, and all your professors expect that in every class. Yes, you're going to learn from the teacher. It is our job to teach you. Don't get me wrong. But it's also our job to help facilitate you learning from more than just from us, from each other, from references, from sources, and things like that. So what I'm saying is don't expect, for me at least, to get heavily, usually what I do is I let the discussion play out, and then towards the end, I'll give like a summary of the entire discussion or something like that. So don't feel like I've let you down if you don't see me replying to your posts. I'm watching. And usually what will happen is you'll see a rating of your post, a grade. It'll be over here where it says ratings. when I go in as the teacher and rate your post, give it a grade, you'll see it's received a rating. You'll know that I've read it when you get it rated, because I'm the only one that can do that, can give it the grade. Now I'm going to delete these because I don't want to leave these in here. They're nonsense. So let me pull that out. Whoops, happened to my, something weird happened there. Let me go back to the course.
So can I ask a question?
No, you sure can. Anytime. Go right ahead.
Well, I clicked on reading and I'm it. Is that correct?
Hummel? Yeah.
Did it check it as if I've already read? Is it going to automatically check everything every time you go?
That means you just look. It doesn't mean that you completed it. It just means that you looked at that.
Mr. Hardy?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jeanette.
Okay, I still haven't been able to order my books.
Okay.
So I will do that tonight online.
Okay.
So, is that okay though? But we don't have to have them read until you said March 12th. Is that correct?
Right. Yes.
But if you go ahead and order it online, there you can go ahead and get, if you get a you know, if you get a an electronic receipt, an email or something with the receipt. I talked about this in the first half of class. There is a place I'll show you real quickly here on the course site where you can go to obtain the first week's readings that are scanned as PDF files. If you provide a receipt. Like if you go right here on where it says, what if, where I'm hovering right now, where it says, what if my textbooks have not arrived, and follow the instructions there, then it'll send me a message saying that you've submitted your receipt. I'll see your receipt and I can open up those scans of those files for you to go ahead and read right away. If you don't want to wait for your book to get here before you start reading them.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
But you have to have a receipt. So if you haven't ordered them yet, it won't work. But once you've ordered them, if you want to go ahead and do that, I'll be glad to take care of that for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if any of you that are watching read electronic books, but I think somebody, I didn't check it myself, but one of the students in the last session of DCC 101 said the Kindle version of the book was like $4 or something. And even the print is under 10, isn't it? Isn't it like
$17, $15?
Was it that much? Oh,
I think I paid that much.
I know the MLA handbook is about that much.
Well, maybe
I was thinking that was more like about $7, but
maybe
I'm wrong.
Maybe I paid $12 for it.
Okay, that's more in line. Yeah, you know, believe me, when you start, I'm amazed at what some textbooks cost for business classes and psychology classes. Oh my goodness, are any of you psychology majors or business majors?
I'm business and Bible.
Okay. I'm sorry to tell you, but the business books, the books for Bible and stuff are not bad at all compared. But I mean, people are paying $100 a pop for textbooks, you know, for a book. And I'm like, wow, so much money. Wow. I should write textbooks. I'm telling you, I'm in the wrong business. I shouldn't be teaching. I should be writing books. I'd drive a nicer car and live in a nicer house, I think.
It's cheaper to rent them, though.
You can rent some of them, yes.
Yeah.
So you'll participate in the discussion forum. You'll also write a reflection on time management. So that's this assignment here. So what you'll do on this is after reading Hummel chapters 1 through 3, focus on pages 18 through 23, list 3 key points from that section of reading and describe how you see each point applying to you as you begin taking classes at DCC. Be specific. Note it says this journal should be at least 3 full paragraphs, okay? From my perspective, a paragraph is no fewer than 3 sentences, okay? That's how I view a paragraph. A paragraph has to contain at least 3 sentences to really qualify. Typically, I look for more like about 5, but 3 minimum. So when you break that down, if it has to be at least 3 full paragraphs, that means it needs to be at least 9 full sentences for me to count it as full, you know, as satisfying the requirement. But this is an online text thing. So you hit add submission and you'll just type the answers into this box. And this box works just like a word processor. In fact, if you click this button, it gives you even more options. You can indent, you can underline, you can bold, you can italicize, you can make numbered lists, bullet lists. Yeah. So
So does that have to be in a certain format when we type?
No, so long as like, it doesn't have to be double spaced and all that stuff like you would in a paper. Okay. So just type your answers, and you can even put a smiley face in there if you really are, you know, desperate to do something. I don't recommend those in regular papers. Okay. But you know, you can do all these different things with it. You can insert an image into it. If you want to put a picture of something, all those things are possible there. Mainly we're looking for text though. When you're done, you'll hit somewhere. I keep messing it up. Hang on. Having trouble scrolling down the side here. There we go. There. When you get done typing, you hit save changes here, and it'll submit it. And then I'll see it. I'll grade it, make comments about it, and you'll receive my feedback. Okay. Now, so that's the reflection assignment that you'll do. Okay, let's get back to the... So we've talked about the reading, we've talked about the discussion, we've talked about the reflection. You'll also do a couple of other things. One of the things you'll need to do is you'll need to upload a picture of yourself to your Moodle profile. So the steps to do that are here on the, it'll tell you how to do that here. It'll tell you to go over to the administration block on the left side. Actually, it's not on the left side anymore. That's old instructions, but the administration block is right here. Let me show you. I think it's underneath the pictures here. Let me move these down. Oh, that's the navigation block. Administration block. Okay, so you go to My Profile Settings, and you can go to Edit Profile. And so here's where you'll have your things like your username, your password, and all that stuff. And one of the things you can do down here is, like, you can put things about, you can put your profile, things about yourself. So when I go down to mine down here, it says that I'm director of non-traditional structure here at the college. Mm-hmm. Tells where I got my degrees, tells my family, my wife, my kids, where I go to church, my ministry experience, and those kinds of things. Okay, I think that's all up to date. And then user picture is where you'll change your, put up your profile picture. So, like, for example, there's my current picture. If I want to do a new picture, I'll click new picture, and it'll take me to browse in my computer, find the picture I want to put up, and post it up there. You know, if I want to change it. I should, that's a bad picture. But anyway, it's like a driver's license picture, almost that bad. So that's one of the other assignments that you'll complete. My profiles setting, you'll go in and add or change. If you have a profile picture in there already, if you've already done that, you don't need to do anything. It's already done. The way I'll know you've completed the assignment is there's a picture by your profile. If there's not a picture by your profile, I'll know you haven't done the assignment. If you have, then, you know, it's pretty simple for me to see. So you have until March the 12th to accomplish that. All right, so let's go back in. Let me put these back up over here. Move up towards the top, maybe. There we go. And go back to the homepage of the course here. So when you talked about the updating your profile picture, another thing you're going to do is do what's called the online learning readiness assessments, called Smarter Measure. Jimmy, how long did it take you to do that? Like a half hour, maybe, at most?
Yeah.
It's not a very time-consuming thing. It's a what'll happen is you'll contact me, and I'll give you a code to go in and take it online. Whoops, too far.
There we go.
What you'll do is you'll send me, you'll email me for an access code. And then it will, I'll give you the link to where to go to do it. Actually, you'll just go to this website to do it. When you get there, it'll open up like this. And it'll say, you'll log in as a, I guess you'll log in as a first time user. Is that right, Jimmy, when you did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, here. And you'll enter the code that I gave you. You'll enter the access code that I gave you. You'll click login and it'll start the thing, the process for you. Okay. When you're done, it'll give you results. Let me go back to here where it says what to do when you're done. When you've finished it, you'll need to contact me by message asking me to set, or by email or by message asking me to set up a time when you and I will review your results in a web conference like the one we're doing here. I know you went over yours with Jean-Claude already, right? So we can probably mark you as having completed since you've already done it with him, unless you want to do it with me too. So anyway, so you'll do that. It takes about 30 minutes to do, and the follow-up thing with me takes anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. Usually it takes less than 30, usually 15 to talk over your results, point out anything that looks like it might be an issue that we might want to talk about, how you're going to deal with it. You know, like if it shows, like some of the things it talks about how much time you have. And, you know, if it says you have very little time to do schoolwork, we're going to want to talk about how are you going to make this happen. If it comes out that your answers indicate that you have precious little time to do any schoolwork, we're going to have to talk about what kind of decisions you're going to have to make in order to be successful in school, because college is not high school.
Right.
It's time consuming, and it takes effort and things like that. And it doesn't mean you can't do it. It means that we may want to talk about what kind of decisions are going to have to be made. You know, we all make decisions in life. And sometimes those decisions are to give up some things for something else. You know, when my son is 20 now, my older son, I have a daughter who's 22, a son who's 20, and a son who's 12. And when my son, older son, Caleb, was about 9 years old, I think 8 or 9 years old, he started playing baseball, Carrollton Pony Baseball here in town. And then later on played middle school and high school baseball until he graduated from high school. And certainly by the time he got to middle school, and he was playing baseball a lot, and I wanted to go to his baseball games. Well, for years I had played softball on the church softball team, in the Farmers Branch Church Softball League right here, right around the corner from the college. And I really liked playing softball. I enjoyed it. It was one of the few athletic endeavors I was still involved in at my age. You know, I was in my mid 40s. I'm 57 now. So you got to figure, you know, I was about 47 then, one of the old guys on the team even at that time. And I was kind of hanging on, but it came to a point where I decided that if I was going to really go watch my son play baseball the way I wanted to, and I really wanted to, then I was going to have to stop doing some things. And one of the things I stopped doing was playing softball. I miss it, but I don't regret it. You know, I'll never, as much as I love playing softball, I love watching my son play baseball more, especially since he doesn't play baseball anymore. He didn't pursue it after high school, which is probably wise. He's a music student now, and he's giving full time to that and everything. But you know, I'll never get another chance to watch my son play baseball again. And I'm grateful for having had the chance to watch him do that when he was young. And so I made the decision to give up something that I really enjoyed. So at the end of it, but by the time it was over, I really, you know, by the time it was all said and done and he was done playing baseball, I felt like I was too old to go back to playing softball. So I pretty much gave it up forever at that point. And again, I don't regret that. I'm not complaining about that. I'm not patting myself on the back for it either. I'm just saying that's how it is. You know, the same thing could be true with school. You know, there may be some things if you're smarter measure assessment, or if you just know in your heart that, hey, I don't have enough time to do this the way things are, you may have to sit down and look at some things and say, I can't do this anymore for a while, or at least for the next 4 years, I can't do this like I have been. For some people, it's a really hard decision because I hear from students all the time that, you know, before I started full-time college here at DCC, I did more at church than I do now. Because some of the time that I used to spend as a volunteer working with the youth group, helping with this ministry or something like that, I have to use for study now. And they feel guilty about that sometimes, about the fact that, you know, they're not as involved in church. The only thing I can tell them is this. Your education here is an investment in what you're going to do in the future as well. I did the same thing. I mean, just a little background about me. I didn't go to college right out of high school. I joined the Marine Corps right out of high school. And I served 4 years in the Marine Corps, got out of the Marine Corps when I was 22, moved back to my hometown of Indianapolis, went to work in the tool business. My father worked 38 years for General Motors at a plant in Indianapolis making aircraft, gas turbine engines for Bell Ranger helicopters that they assemble right over here in Fort Worth, that they were being used during the Vietnam War. And they made those things 24/7 every week. I mean, they worked, that plant ran three shifts a day, 7 days a week, because helicopters were getting shot down every day in Vietnam and needing to have the whole helicopters needed to be replaced, engines needed to be replaced. It was a happening place. And there were a lot of plants in the Indianapolis area that made lots of automobile and aircraft stuff. So I went to work in the business of selling tools to those people. And so I did that for a few years, but finally at the age of 25, right before I turned 26, God really laid it on my heart to go into ministry. So I walked away from all that, enrolled full-time at a Bible college similar to DCC. I went to Ozark Christian College up in Joplin, Missouri, which is actually where my son is going to school now. My daughter graduated from DCC here back in May. My son Caleb is at Ozark where I went to school in his sophomore year right now. So anyway, and part of the reason I got bit with the ministry bug was because I was so heavily involved. I was single, you know, and so I had a lot of time. I was a volunteer with the youth group. You know, just about any time the pastor or anybody at the church would say, hey, we need volunteers for something, I was always there. Then I went off to college and didn't serve nearly as much in the church as I did. But I understood that what I was doing in college was preparing me to do even more once I got out. And so while it was a tough decision to make, especially since I had to leave town, you know, we didn't have anything like Flex Campus back then, or I could have stayed in Indianapolis and, you know, taken my classes like you all are. This didn't exist in 1984 when I went to college. None of this, there was no internet, there was none of this stuff. So, you know, I couldn't do any of this. So I had to pack up and move to where I was going to go to school. And again, I don't regret that or anything, but I'm just saying that I understood that me having to pull back on some of what I'd been doing was a chance for me to get prepared to do even more on the other side of that. So I was able to go into full-time vocational ministry on the other side of actually, while I was still in college, I got hired to be a preacher at a church on the weekends, got valuable experience preaching both Sunday morning and Sunday night for 2.5 years at a little church in Oklahoma. Happened to write 2 sermons a week and deliver them while I was still a college student for 2.5 years. Was a real blessing to me, helped prepare me very strongly for ministry when I got out and everything. So anyway, so please understand that, you know, sometimes we have to make decisions. Another part of it will be, do you have the technology that you need? You'll need to check that out and see, you know, these are the things that you do need here. You don't need a lot of high-tech stuff, but you need skills. Some skills, like you need to be able to use Microsoft Word or some other word processing program. If you don't use Microsoft Word, you need to use a word processor that will save your work in a compatible format. I don't know if any of you use OpenOffice. OpenOffice is free, and it's kind of a mimicking site or mimic kind of program to what you can do. Anything you can do with Microsoft Office, you can just about do with OpenOffice. But it's free, okay? So OpenOffice Writer is the word processing program in OpenOffice that's similar to Microsoft Word. The main thing you have to remember if you're going to use OpenOffice for your work, and you certainly can, is when you save your work, don't just hit save, hit save as, and choose the Microsoft Office format, DOCX, or DOC, usually DOCX is the latest. So don't use theirs, I think theirs is called OD something, ODT or something like that, don't use that. Use the, save it as a DOCX format, and I'll be able to open it with my Microsoft Office programs and stuff like that. So you need to be able to use Microsoft Word, Microsoft PowerPoint, or a similar program to create like slideshows and such. Be able to navigate and search the internet, be able to download and open files, and be able to download and install software. I don't meet too many people in the world today that can't do any of that, or can't do all of that. And there's some, you know, like, I don't know if my dad can do it. He's 82. he does some of it. I still don't think he knows how to open a file. Like if I send him pictures attached to an email, he can read the email, but he doesn't know how to read. He doesn't know how to see the pictures. Bless his heart. So my brother has to, my dad lives in Indianapolis still. My brother also lives there. So my brother has to go over to the house and open the email for him and show him the pictures. Okay. But he's an exception. Some of the older folks are not as good at it. Any kid can do it. I can promise. Any kid over 12 can do all this. I'm pretty sure easily and show you how to do it. If you don't know how to do it, ask your kids. They know how to do it. You'll need a computer or access to a computer, a Windows or a Mac, either one works fine. This gives you some of the requirements. Use a Windows 8, 7, or Vista usually. Usually any computer that's been purchased in the last 3 years exceeds the requirements that are here. You know, you'll either use Windows or Mac. For mobile platforms, iOS and Android work, Windows Phone works. You can access the Moodle site, this course site on your, just go to the web browser on your phone or your tablet and type in online.dallas.edu and you can navigate the course site and do stuff with it. And you can do almost everything there you can do with a computer. Yeah, it's very convenient. You need to have some Microsoft Office or OpenOffice if you're going to use that, but make sure you save in the right format. When you get into your Bible classes, you'll purchase Logos Bible Study software. It'll actually be added to your bill. You'll pay $80 for it over 2 semesters, and you'll own it. Okay, and that'll be used in your Bible classes and things like that. And when you get in, the main class where you learn really how to use it the most is going to be your introduction to biblical interpretation, which since you two are not taking it in this session, you're probably going to take it in the summer session.
Yeah, I take New Testament in some sessions.
Okay, New Testament survey? Yeah, okay. In New Testament survey, you'll mostly just do some reading from it. It's an introduction to biblical interpretation where you learn how to really use the powerful search features and the word studies and the actual exegetical things that really help you dig deep and study, okay? Which, believe me, it's a total bargain. What you get for $160 total with that is, I just can't, I try to explain to students all the time how I had to do exegetical papers when I was in class. I'm sitting in the library and I've got stacks of books this tall, and I'm looking through them and copying stuff down on note cards, and it's unbelievable. And today I sit at my laptop and I type a few keystrokes and bam, I've got all that right in front of me. And I'm just like, how in the world, you know, how did I make it before? You know, of course I typed my papers back then on a manual typewriter, wasn't even electric, you know, and things like that, but I'm old. So there you go. Of course, you'll need to be able to get on the internet. You'll need to have a computer with a microphone, and either built in or one that you can plug into it. And we recommend when you're doing live web conferences, especially, that you use earbuds or earphones, just to keep feedback and stuff from happening. Or Janet, you're calling in on your phone, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you logged into the conference with your computer, but you chose the phone option for audio rather than the computer option, right?
Yeah, because on the phone, it's mm-hmm. smaller. The writing is smaller, so I can't see it. So I just pulled it up on there.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to see it's there, you know. But yeah, you know, when you're using your computer, you don't necessarily have to use the phone. you could log in with your computer and use the computer audio and use the microphone and speaker that's in your computer rather than having to call on the phone. So you can go either way with that.
Okay.
And most laptops today have a built-in webcam. Yeah, and so you don't have to worry about that. And if you're doing like with my iPad, it uses my webcam in my iPad, you know, or my phone, either one. So you know, most of you have these things available. You know, if you don't own a computer, or if there's not a computer in your house that belongs to somebody else that you can access most of the time, that's something that you really need to consider how you can rectify. I know, you know, I have students that say, you know, well, I can only do my homework on Fridays because that's when I go to my auntie's house and she's the one that has a computer. Okay. It's going to be really hard for you to keep up with your work if you can only access a computer for a few hours a week. You need to be able to be in a situation really where you can pretty much have constant access, or mostly constant access to a computer to do your work. You'll find it, if you're having to go to the library all the time to use the computer, or go to a relative's house or something like that, you're going to find that it's going to be really hard to keep up with your work. So, I know, when I start talking about money, what sounds like a little bit of money to one person sounds like a fortune to another. You know, so if I say, you know, computers aren't that expensive today, and I say, you know, you can go over to Micro Center or somewhere and pick up a computer that meets these requirements for, say, $400, some people are going to say, that's a fortune. I know when in my life when $400 has been a fortune. You know, I also know that what a computer used to cost compared to what you can get them for now today. I mean, you used to not be able to get a laptop computer for under $1,000 anywhere. Now you can get them for under $1,000 all the time.
Yeah.
You know, my first desktop computer I bought cost me $1,500. It would be a piece of junk today, you know, compared to what, for $1,500 today, my goodness, you'd have something that, you know, you could fly to the moon practically, you know. And of course, they didn't have much high tech when they flew to the moon either. That's another first time I went to Houston to the Space Center and saw and really looked at the thing they flew to the moon in, and I looked at how low tech it was. I thought, man, I wouldn't drive to El Paso in that thing, let alone fly to the moon in it. Those guys were braver or stupider than you must think, you know. But anyway, okay, so that's the kind of technology you're going to need. We did this already, setting up a Word document to comply with MLA formatting. I showed that in the first half of class, so you can go back and look at that.
Okay.
You're gonna create a PowerPoint on DCC culture during this time. And the way this is gonna work is, first thing you're gonna do is you're gonna listen to a sermon. And to listen to that sermon, you're gonna click on this, you'll see a little player like this on the course site. You're gonna click this button. And when you do, you should hear audio. Let's see if we do.
We are thrilled to have Doug back in Texas, and he is related to the...
That's our former president, Dusty Ruback. He just left us last year. We have a new president now, President Smith. But you're going to listen to this sermon that President Ruback preached in chapel back in 2006, because in this sermon he talks a lot about what DCC culture is and what we do here at DCC. So after you do that, then you're going to... you're going to do this assignment. The assignment is prepare a PowerPoint presentation that's a personal response to these questions. One, what do you believe is your life mission? Two, how does your life mission fit with being a student at DCC? Okay, so this assignment is part of your computer literacy evaluation. I'm going to be using this rubric to assess it. So your presentation needs to include at least 5 slides. Okay. It needs to have a background color, not just white, or a background pattern, or a background graphic, okay? It should use at least 2 different fonts and 2 different font sizes, okay? It should use at least 1 picture or graphic. It can be one that you've imported or one that you've created with a drawing tool in PowerPoint. And it should speak to those 2 questions in the assignment. A personal life mission statement should be explicitly stated in the presentation. And the content on each slide must be well organized and uncluttered. Okay? It's that simple. So once you do that, you upload it. So you come down here to add submission. And when you do, It now gives you a spot where you'll click on the plus sign here, and you'll browse your computer, just like when you're adding an email attachment or something like that. You'll find the file in your folder, and you'll click open. It'll put it there, and then you'll click, come down here, and you'll click submit or upload this file. And when you do, it'll be uploaded there. Maybe. Oh yeah, that was a pretty big file. That's why it's taking a while. I forgot, that was a class recording. I should have picked a smaller file. I'm sorry.
We have
yeah, Janet,
like Jeanette. 6 days. You said we have 6 days to go.
No, actually, I need to change that. You actually have until March the 12th on that.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, I saw that too. I forget. I was in a rush to try to redo everything on the site, and I didn't get all the due dates adjusted. I'll try to work on that tomorrow or okay. Monday to try to get the all. So that, you know, everything that I'm showing you that's in the after class section, you have until the 12th of March to finish. Okay.
Okay.
So don't let that throw you. Yeah, I can see why that would have shocked you.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was like, okay. I was like writing on my notes. I'm like, I have 6 days.
Yeah, that's not, see, because it says February 27th. That's not true. It's actually going to be due March the 12th. So okay. You have quite a bit longer to work on that. But anyway, okay. So that's how you do that. That's a good reminder to me to get in there and fix that stuff, though. And then these are just things you'll read, tips for success in online education. And then let me talk to you about spiritual disciplines as they're integrated into the curriculum here at the college. First of all, we have two parts to our mission statement here at the college. The mission of the college is to educate and mentor students to become people of influence under God's influence for a life of influence. Okay, that's our mission statement. That means we don't just focus on the educate part, but we also mentor people. The mentoring part has quite a bit to do with your spiritual development, your emotional development, your relational development. And one of the things that we find is in the area of spiritual growth and personal growth are spiritual disciplines. So from time to time in some of your classes, you're going to find activities that aren't really part of the subject matter that are going to be spiritual disciplines things. For example, I think it's in the, which class is it? I believe it's the Foundations of Leadership class, where the spiritual discipline that's dealt with in that class is meditation. And so in addition to the assignments you have about the subject itself, about leadership and stuff, there's also going to be these spiritual disciplines exercises you're going to do. That you'll be graded on and stuff. Okay, so these are embedded through different courses. They're generally embedded in required courses that everybody has to take, as opposed to elective courses or major courses. So you're gonna find them early on in some of these classes. I don't know if there's any in Comp 2 or not. There are none in this class because this class is too short. I don't know if there are any in Comp 2, but I know in Foundations of Leadership. I think perhaps in evangelism, and I'm not sure, but some other classes as well. There'll be the disciplines of meditation, of Bible reading, of prayer, I think of fasting. There's five or six that you do. And some of them consist of listening to a recording and then responding to it with a journal entry or something like that. Some of them will be actually say, try this. And then write it, you know, say, try this form of meditation. After you're done, write how you were, you know, did it help you? Did it not help you? These are the kinds of things that there's not really right and wrong answers about. It's more about did you complete it than did you make an A or B on it? Because they're not the kind of things that we grade with grade. This is not the educate part. This is the mentor part of what we do here, okay? But these are integrated into the curriculum. You'll find them as part of different class sites along the way. After you've read the stuff you're supposed to read from the MLA handbook, you'll take this quiz on writing in MLA. Let me see here. Open it up so I can show you. It's a quiz, but it's not a quiz. It is a quiz, but it's not a quiz. What I mean by that is you're allowed to use notes, your book, whatever, while you take the quiz. Okay. You need to score at least an 85% on this quiz in order to pass this class. Okay. Now you can take the quiz three different times and it's only going to count your highest grade. Once you take it once, you have to wait an hour before you can take it again. And each time you take it, you can only take 3 hours to do it. Okay. So you can open it up and you can take 3 hours to take the quiz. At the end of 3 hours, it's going to close. So you need to get it done before then. And then once you're done with it, you have to wait an hour before you can attempt it again. Okay. I don't recommend that you try doing this an hour before the deadline. Okay. Even though you don't have to finish this till March the 12th, I would encourage you to take this, you know, a couple of days before that. So if you need to do a retake once or twice, you can. Okay. But make sure you score at least an 85% by your third attempt. Okay. Study the material before you take the quiz. Otherwise, your 3 hour time limit might expire before you get there. I'm trying to remember how many questions there are on it. Let me see if I'm going to pretend to take it here real quick and see what it says. See, notice when I go into attempt it, it says the quiz has a time limit and it has a 3 attempt limit, and so I'm about to start a new attempt. Do I really want to? I can hit start attempt quiz now. Okay, I just did that. Why isn't it let me do it? Oh, well, no, it should be open. Oh, you know why? Because I'm not a student in the class. I'm the teacher. Oh, there it goes. Now it's showing me. So there's the first question. There's only 9 questions. Okay. So it's, you know,
okay.
There's only 9 questions. You have 3 hours, 9 questions.
3 hours, I mean, just answer 9 questions. Hard,
it ain't that hard, folks. Okay.
That made me feel a little bit about
that. Okay. So I just wanted you to see that. So anyway, and then when you finish your attempt, then it'll tell you, in any quiz that you have will look like this. It'll say, okay, in my case, it says not yet answered. Yours should say answered when you do it. And then you can either go return attempt or submit all and finish. I'm going to get a really bad grade here. I'm going to get a big fat 0. Okay. So my grade was, boom, I got a 0. But I'm okay because I don't need to pass this class, but you do. So I can live with my 0. Plus I get 2 more chances to raise my 0 if I really, really want to do it. I'll get out of there. There we go. Almost there. Okay. Also, one of the things you'll do during this time before the 12th is you'll send a message to me. Now, Jeanette, you've already done this. Send a message to me through the Moodle messaging system. You've sent me a couple now, I think.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in the first half of class, too. The message you're going to send me for a grade, anyway, is this one. You're going to send me a message describing what topic you're going to address in your research paper that's going to be your final project for the class. We'll go back and talk about what that project is. But the bottom line is your topic for your paper is as wide open as you want to make it. I've had some of the most diverse topics ever. You know, I've had people write on the subject of time management because they were reading Hummel at the time. I've had people do a biblical research one. One guy wrote a one on the history of the unicycle. Okay, because he was actually a unicyclist and he wanted people to know, you know, where did unicycles come from and that kind of thing. It can be whatever you want it to be, really. It's wide open. But you'll send me a message telling me what your topic is going to be. Okay, and so that's used. And here's instructions on how to use the Moodle messaging system right here that you can click on for that. Okay, so let's talk about that final project. Generally, most classes will give you a a thing up here called preview of the final project at near the top of the class site. So this is your final project for this class. For this class, let me pull this down this way out of the way. There we go. You're going to write a paper on any subject of personal interest. It could be even a paper on time management using Hummel as a source, but the paper must meet these following guidelines. One, it must be no shorter than 2 pages, and it must be no longer than 2.5 pages, plus an additional page for works cited. This is not a long paper, people. Okay, not at all. It needs to cite 3 different sources using MLA style. Only one of those sources can be from the internet, and the Bible will count as a source too if you use it. Okay, now, internet and electronic resources are not always the same thing. Jeanette, I was telling them in the first half of class that I'm also going to put on the site tomorrow a recording that was made by Mrs. Reynolds, our librarian, at the start of the last DCC 101 class, that explains how to use the electronic resources in the library, the journals and the databases and things that you can access from off campus. You don't have to come to the library here on campus to access those things. You can access them electronically. Okay, that is not the same thing as an internet source. Okay, an internet source is something that you can just go to on the internet and grab. Anybody can get. Okay, these are things that the only way you can get into these databases and journals is by being logged into Moodle as a student here.
Okay.
And when you watch that part, you'll see her explain how to do that. So they don't, in fact, technically none of them actually have to be a print resource. They can all be electronic if you need them to be. Okay. You're gonna submit it at the beginning of the third session, and you're going to put it on a discussion forum, and your fellow students are going to see it. This is a process that we call peer review. Okay, your fellow students will be able to see your first paper that you put up, and they're going to comment on it. They're going to offer constructive criticism of your writing and suggest some edits to you. You're going to do the same thing for them. Okay. The purpose of this is not to run down your fellow students and say, man, you can't write a lick, can you? Or something. I don't expect any of you to do that. You know, that would be a very rude thing to do, and I don't think any of you are rude people. But the point is to help them say, I think you should have maybe said it this way, or I think your punctuation there wasn't exactly right, or something like that. It's to help people out. Okay. At the end of the day, I'm not really going to give you as much of a grade as your participation with your fellow, but these are the things that we're going to look at as a rubric. You know, did you double space it? Did you have the right kind of margins and indentations? Did you use quotation marks where they were noted, where they were needed? Did you cite your sources and all that kind of thing? We'll go into evaluating the grade on the paper.
So I'm sure composition. This is where you were saying comp.
Yeah, and yeah, if you're in comp class, this will help you with this assignment a lot. Okay. So, yeah, I expect a lot from you that are in comp too. No, not really. I mean, you are going to have the benefit of a man who I would tell you he's one of the best writing teachers I've ever met in my life, and he has a passion for helping you all learn how to be great writers. My daughter, when she had him for class, my daughter's a good writer. And she said, I can't believe how much, and he even told me, he said, she's an excellent writer when she started with it. But by the time they were done, she said, I can't believe how much of a better writer. She's contemplating getting ready to go to graduate school in the fall. And she feels very confident about her writing ability because of Dr. Brunson's influence on her writing here at DCC. She feels like he prepared her well to go into a master's program. So, now, there's also a before class sections before the next class too. So keep in mind that you need to do these things by March 13th. There's another quiz you'll take over you'll read these excerpts from the DCC catalog and you'll take a quiz over it. You'll do the reading in Hummel again, the next set of reading. You'll do another discussion and another time management reflection. Okay. So, and then we'll, then you can watch the recording. Jeanette, as I mentioned in the first part of class, this is the only time we're going to meet live, this class. The other two class sessions, you'll just watch the recordings that I made with the students who took this in the first half of the semester. So you'll get the same material they got. You just won't be live. But for that reason, you're free to contact me at any time with questions about things or anything like that. I'll be happy to answer.
Okay.
A couple of more things that are outside the scope of your writing assignments and things like that that I need to make sure I mention to you. You're also going to be, if I don't know if Mrs. Latiker, when she was enrolling you in the classes you're in or anything, did she say anything to you about DCI, Developing Christian Influence?
I'm not sure. It just, okay. I would have to go back into the email, because I did see,
okay.
She did email me like a long script, and right. I was at work. Okay. I just like, it just seemed
that's okay.
Fine at the moment.
You're all going to automatically be enrolled in something called DCI, Developing Christian Influence, okay? It's not for credit. It doesn't cost you any money, but you do have to do it, okay?
Okay.
And what it mainly involves is some form of Christian service, and most of you are doing that already, okay? So you're probably not enrolled in it yet, but once you are, it'll appear in that my courses tab at the top. It'll say DCI, Developing Christian Influence. I can show you what it looks like, I think. Let me go to home here. And you should receive an email from Eric Hinton, our Dean of Students, who oversees that once you've been added to it. I think it's here, maybe. Let me see if I can. This is where it's at. Maybe not. Okay, let me go back here. I know there is a course site here for it somewhere. Maybe it's under Flex Campus Courses.
I have a quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
Earlier, you were talking about how we get points or credited for doing the class. When it's going to be recorded, you said you had a list right there that we were going to do, right? That we would just check off? Or how would you go about grading our participation?
Okay. When you submit your notes, I'll give you a grade over your notes.
Oh. Okay.
And that's how you get your participation grade when you do the recording.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
So for you tonight, for example, Jeanette, you're going to get, you know, half. I'm going to compute half your grade by your participation live right now and the other half by the notes you submit over the first half of the recording.
Oh, okay.
So I'll average those together, you know. And I'll say right now you're doing fine on participation live. You're asking questions. You're involved in the discussion. So you're doing well. So that's good. No worries there. Somewhere, the DCI, where is that at? I've got to. Maybe it's under General Studies. I don't think so, though. If I don't find it quickly, I'll just tell you that you'll get an email from Mr. Hinton that will give you all the information about it. But
I believe it's in General Studies, and it'll show you like the list of all the courses that they're available.
Okay. That's where I thought it should be. That either General Studies or, let's see. Are we in that? Not yet. Let's see. It's trying to connect. I don't know what's bogging it down right now. There's English Composition 1 with Dr. Brunson. Oh, there it is. DCCI, DCC 101. No, that's DCC 1. That's what we're in right now. I'm looking for Developing Christian Influence. Anyway, okay, I'm not going to waste your evening me trying to hunt and peck and find this thing. Just trust me that it does exist. And that when you get the email from Mr. Hinton, it'll give you the link on where to go to find it. But for you all, the basic way that you could, that you fulfill the requirements for that is by submitting a report to that, just that documents your hours. And it's all on the honor system. It's, you don't have to have like a note from the pastor that says you served at the church, or a note from the organization that says you volunteered there. You just record it. You just say, this is what I did. Okay. It's that simple. I mean, that's the main thing that you do for this is Christian. We used to call it Christian service. We've changed the name of it, but that's basically what it is. Developing Christian influence, or Christian service. So we'll leave that as that at that. And, where did my My Courses thing that was up there go? Like it disappeared. Pretty weird. Oh, you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, hang on a second. Stop this. The DCI thing might be right here. No, wrong. Okay. Anyhow. But it really does exist. I know it does. I've seen it before. I'm not just hallucinating. Anyway, okay. So let me go back to My Courses. Okay. And get back into this course. That's the one I just finished. This is the one we're currently in. All right, we're back to our course page now. So I know we've covered a long list of things tonight in this first, but part of the reason for that is so that I want to give you all the information that I can to help you get off to a good start. You know, reason I'm spending my Friday night with you instead of relaxing is because I want very much for you all to succeed here. Our goal is for each one of you to graduate from DCC. To walk across the stage some May, receive a diploma from our president in your hand, and be able to take that diploma then and go on to further education or go into the workplace. We're at the very early stages of that with you all. But I'm committed, and the rest of us here are committed to doing everything that we can to ensure your success. It's not just about us as an institution, as a business, but it's about the kingdom of God as well. Your success matters very much, not just to the business world or the education world, but to the kingdom of God, no matter what your degree's in, whether it's in education or business or psychology or ministry. It's very important to us that we give you everything that we can to help you succeed and to do it well. So that's our commitment to you, and I hope that this little class that you're taking, as you reflect on it down the road sometime, maybe it's a year from now or something, you'll say, oh yeah, we learned about that in DCC 101. I'm glad we learned about it because I'm using it right now and everything. So I know some of this, for some of you, you know, the talk that you're going to see in some of the recordings that you're going to watch where I go through, you know, first of all, I'm not an English teacher, but in some of those I talk about, you know, how to make sentences, how to make clauses, how to write paragraphs. Some of you are going to say, oh, come on, really? I already know all this. Trust me, I grade papers. Some people who think they already know it, don't already know it. Or they don't know it right, because I still have to correct things like comma splices and run-on sentences and misspellings and stuff all the time. So please don't feel insulted when some of that stuff you see in those other two recordings is going to seem like pretty elementary grammar and things like that. I'm trying to help. Yeah. And if at the end of it you say, you know, you wasted 15 minutes of my time with that, well, I'm sorry, but I wasted 15 minutes of your time, I guess. But if it helps you, I'm glad I gave you 15 minutes of that instruction.
Right.
So anyway, you know, with that being said, do either of you have any further questions before we shut it down for tonight?
Well, I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm asking all the questions.
No.
The reason why is because I work at a dealership, so most of the time I'm really busy. But
sure.
I just want to make sure I get everything and, you know, before. So I just had a question. What is the sessions 2 and 3, is that going to be every Friday or just we can do whenever?
Whenever. You just have to finish, like, you could actually watch those recordings anytime you want, because they're going to be posted on the site, because like, they're already done. They're recordings that I already made with other students of the same material. So, no, we're not going to meet again as a class together after tonight. This is our one and only class session.
Okay.
The other two sessions are going to be recordings of the other two sessions that I made when I taught this the last time around. I would advise you to, you know, kind of take it in the order here. So don't try to watch session 2's recording until you've completed all the after class assignments and everything for this session. Take it in the order that it comes. But if you go faster than, you know, than what I said you had to do it, if, you know, if you get done by March the 6th instead of March the 12th, no harm, no foul. Go ahead. You know, but you know, I wanted you to be able to pace yourself if you needed to. Okay. The only area where that's going to be where time is going to be kind of a thing is that one area, and it's the discussion forums where you have to talk to each other. So you'll want to be conscious of the fact that even though you may have submitted your thing to the forum early, your classmate might wait a while and closer to the deadline. So you need to be prepared to go ahead and answer them at that time. You know, because they're using the full amount of time when you may have only used part of the time. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You understand how I'm doing that? Same thing with the submission of the paper, where you're going to be commenting on each other's papers. So be prepared when you see, and you'll get a notification that something's been posted, and you'll know that you can go in and comment on it at that time. But everything else, you can do at your own pace. Pretty much, so long as you meet the deadline, you know, as long as all the after class stuff is done by the 12th of March, and so forth and so on. That makes sense, Jeanette? I keep wanting to say Janet. I know it's Jeanette. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I know. it's your name, and I want to say it right. It's I know you're a forgiving person, but I still should make every effort I can to do the right thing here. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Did you get the answer you wanted there? Okay.
Yes.
How about you, Jimmy? Anything from you?
No, I think we covered a lot. All the questions that I could have asked, I think you probably already asked.
Well, good. Then I hope I did my job right, because that was my goal, was to try to give you, you know.
Because I was lost. I have to be honest with you. I was.
Well, and when you guys, you know, when you're starting the way you all are, I mean, you all just got enrolled like yesterday or the day before or something. I mean, this is fast. Yeah. You didn't, you know, you got enrolled and then you didn't really have time to even think about it. Yeah. You know, and so I'm just trying to put your mind at ease. By showing you, you know, these are the things you have to do. It can be done. You can do this. I'm on your side. I'm going to help you. We're going to work together. We're going to get you through it. So hopefully you didn't come away more scared, but less scared after tonight. So anyway, all right. Well, then I'm going to go ahead and have a closing prayer, and I'll send us on our way. So let's pray.
All right. Great.
Heavenly Father, we're so thankful that you've brought new students here to DCC. Not only these two that have been with me live tonight, but the other four who are enrolled in the class as well, who are watching this recording. We thank you for their participation as well. We're looking forward to what you're going to do in their lives as students here at DCC and in the future beyond that. We love you and we thank you, and we'd ask for your mercies as we travel to go home, those of us that have to get on the road, that you'd keep us safe, and that we'd be able to get a good night's rest, and have a good weekend, and a great week serving you. For we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Good night, Jeanette.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.